Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2.
Actually, it's Super McWaggy World 2, Slaggy's Island. Thank you very much.
Welcome once again, each and every one of our lovely and beautiful listener, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Today is July 19th, 2026, and this is GameBuoy Podcast Episode 194B, Summer Games Fest Side B. This week, we're going to both clear out our backlog of news that has built up following a brief unexpected break, as well as wrap up our discussion in progress about Summer Game Fest 2026. Last episode, we discussed the major conferences, and this week we will be discussing the majority of the smaller ones. As there were a lot of showcases, that means we have a lot of show. Despite this being a direct follow-up to 194 Side A, we will not be skipping the rest of our usual segments this week, as since our last episode, which obviously, sorry for the delay between, I had some dental woes that had to be attended to, and in this country, those are treated as luxury mouth bones, so it was a nightmare. This is likely to be a little bit of a longer episode as a result of all that occurred and all that we got to discuss. With that in mind, you may see the return of our longtime friend, Mr. Timer, but otherwise, let's get this show on the road.
Slaggy, oh my god, I don't think that I've seen Mr. Timer since your wedding.
All right. Slaggy, what is the way that we rhyme?
Well, first up, we have to talk about some news that probably is on your radar, which, of course, is the PlayStation Disc Discourse. So Sony has announced, if you haven't heard that they will stop producing physical discs as of January 2028, and from that point on will be releasing their games solely via digital distribution. We had a comment from Jos van Joynen, the games professor at NYU's Stern School of Business. We've mentioned them on the show before, saying stripping discs improves margins, but will likely require greater storage capacity, which is also increasingly expensive. So, shrugging emoji. You know, a lot of people are upset about this and are being very vocal about it for good reason. And it's like, oh, I'm going to boycott Sony. But, you know, it would have been nice to see this sort of energy also applied towards Microsoft for the BDS boycott. I don't know. I guess physical media matters more than human rights, because physical media is tangible and human rights aren't.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite as simple as that, but I am likewise, you know, it is a little funny to be hearing people use the word boycott with regard to Sony, who are still eating up what Microsoft has been doing when there's been an actual boycott call over human rights, like you say.
Hey, great. Game Pass is a great value.
Well, right, but that having been said, one of the other issues is that this PlayStation thing will affect gamers in America directly, whereas the BDS boycott is largely being called over matters, you know, more important matters, in my opinion, but which are happening to people that most Americans will never meet. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, if they're not here, they're not present, they're not in sight, it's like out of sight, out of mind. Those people, even if I would care about them in theory, because they're not present in my life, I'm just not capable of prioritizing them. And it sucks, but that's just how a lot of people are built, unfortunately. But it is sort of why we talk about the issues we talk about on this show the way we do, because I don't think being a gamer and caring deeply about games and stuff is incompatible with being a constructive, caring part of the world around us as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think too many voices in the gamers space would really prefer us all to just be mindless consumer drones. And I'm just here to say no. In fact, I would say giving in to the mindless consumer drone impulse is probably what turns a lot of non-gamers off to gamers. I think most of us who throw that vibe out end up finding that a lot of the people in our lives actually really like playing games and enjoy dabbling and even stuff like Pokemon once the toxicity is removed. Anyway, I'm getting way too deep into the woods on stuff that is unrelated for an episode that we are too tightly taut on. So let me move things forward. It was interesting because a lot of analysts are noting that we're sort of at the point where before the release of the PS4, it was only something like, 10% of games were being consumed digitally. And, the market was really not leaning digital. Now we're at the point where that's more like 80% of games are being consumed digitally. And so this is kind of in line with when we had done our, rewind episodes and had done our look back. And we had looked at, digital distribution was one of the things we sort of took a look back at. And this does track with the numbers that we had been citing. I hadn't really considered that they would start getting rid of disk drives wholesale so fast. I think this is a major bummer. I think it's going to have major knock-on effects on games preservation, on the games market in general. And actually, we have another news story that unfortunately came like right alongside this, but which is also equally important. That is word that PlayStation is shutting down the PS3 and Vita digital stores next year.
No.
We actually have here a pretty long statement from Frank Cifaldi from the Video Game History Foundation. Basically, it's like we'll link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
I will read just the first paragraph, and I think you can sort of infer what the rest of this is about. This is a response to the discontinuation of PlayStation physical media from 2028 onwards, as well as the closure of the PS3 and PSP digital storefronts. Frank says, "This is unfortunate news for those who still prefer buying games on physical media, and is certainly a hit to consumer rights, the resale market, and game creators whose businesses rely on the physical market. But from the perspective of professional preservationists, this doesn't have as much of an impact as you might expect." Then, Frank sort of goes on to note that basically all of the reasons why the ESA and the Video Game History Foundation sort of are butting heads on how and why games can and should be preserved. In the comments, Frank Cifaldi ended up kind of getting into an argument with someone who was trying to argue that like, oh, all these games are being preserved in the Library of Congress and Frank doesn't want you to know that. And then multiple developers were commenting to that guy like, the Library of Congress or whatever has literally a printed out page of 15 of our pages of code, literally not enough to represent anything of what this actual game is. This is one of those things that is like literally true, but the spirit of it is actually not true at all. And then Frank himself went on to further note on his personal Blue Sky account, which we will also link you to over at GameBuoy.org.
Over at GameBuoy.org.
He's quote tweeting quote re-skeeting a skeet that says, "Piracy is the only existent form of media preservation that exists in games right now. You might find it morally reprehensible, but there is literally no other institution that will keep games alive in 25 to 50 years time." And Frank quote posts this with, "As the director of a historical video game preservation institution and someone who has dedicated his entire adult life to this cause, this is accurate. We have attempted to work with the industry's trade organization to find a legal path forward, but they refuse to offer a meaningful alternative," which is, kind of what I was just noting the nitty gritty of. Stuff's not looking great right now for the way that older folks like us, because we're both in our 40s, it's fair to call us older folks. The way that we engage with games is not the way that Sony is trying to move forward. And obviously in a larger way, as noted, these changes are not consumer friendly and are very market negative, including to the historical market and those of us who do view these games as having artistic qualities. So obviously we as a show are not going to be negative Sony or negative PlayStation, but I as an individual am very negative PlayStation right now.
Yeah, I just feel like I was part of the problem because I mainly buy games digitally these days. And
you know, I do have stacks and stacks and stacks of disc games, but I also buy some stuff digitally. I don't know. I personally like having the freedom of choice. My ideal really would be to just... I actually find the PS5 Pro to be a really acceptable compromise because they have the disk drive add-on, right? So give me the option. Give me an add-on so that I can continue buying these games physically, but it's not, you know, the primary way to get them. I've even shown on the Nintendo Switch 2 side of things, if it's a full game on cart, I'm willing to pay $10 extra to have that full game on cart. I really wish that you know, Sony would make choices that were more pro-consumer rather than we're going to do this and you're going to fall in line. I wish instead that they would follow the market. And yeah, I'm not into this moment of Sony. It feels like the PS3 era of Sony where I think everybody kind of referred to them as arrogant Sony or whatever. Anyway, unfortunately, we have a note here from Valve. This is being run over at Kotaku. We will, of course, link you at GameBuoy.org.
Link you at GameBuoy.org.
Basically, Valve says that retail memory prices right now are lagging behind what they're paying from their suppliers and are basically warning consumers that in the next 3 to 6 months, things are going to get worse. I'm noting this here because many of us, I know Slaggy, I know myself, are starting to pivot away from our Xboxes, have been pivoting away from our Xboxes, are now starting to pivot away from our PlayStations, where a lot of us are starting to think in terms more of like Switch to PC configurations moving forward. If you have a PC that is going to need a memory upgrade, you should do it sooner than later.
Oof, good thing I invested in 32 gigs, even though my wallet is starting.
Yeah, right. It's so crazy, too, because it was, you know, just a couple of years ago, 32 gigs was like nothing. It's like dirt cheap. And now it's suddenly like the holy grail. It feels so weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of these crazy bad news could almost nearly be doom and gloom articles up. But what do you have for us, Slaggy?
Nothing much sunnier because over at Xbox, things are basically imploding. Back on July 6th, CEO Asha Sharma announced that 3,200 employees would be laid off as part of, quote, the most significant restructure in Xbox history, end quote. 1,600 jobs were cut that very day. The other 1,600 will be cut at a later time.
At the top of it, can I just say how fucked that is? That means that there are 1,600 people at Xbox who are basically on paper already fired and they just don't know it. And they're still expected to come into work and work every day, despite the fact that on paper, someone has already made the choice to cut them. That's fucked.
Yep. And that's about 20% of the overall Xbox organization. So, I mean, that's also huge.
Like how demoralizing and demeaning and disrespectful to those individuals.
Yeah. So, you know, also as part of the restructure, you know, we'd had some concern about what would happen to some of these specific studios, you know, not to mention people's jobs, but we do have updates regarding Compulsion Games and Double Fine, which both have spun off to be fully independent. Additionally, we have word that Ninja Theory and Undead Labs have entered terms to join new ownership with funding to complete and grow Senua and State of Decay 3, in their words. And Arcane Lion is reviewing potential strategic options. However, few details have emerged about any of those. You know, this is definitely a better scenario than those studios closing outright. But, you know, it just sucks that we're here in the first place.
And I want to note that's, of course, that's Arcane Leon. And I guess in theory, this sort of suggests that Microsoft was right to show off that Senua trailer for, you know, the Ninja Theory game that they had no intention of ever publishing. But I still really don't like the taste it leaves in my mouth that Microsoft was advertising a game that they never intended on releasing.
Yeah. Did I just call it Arcane, or did they call it Arcane Lion?
Oh, yeah, you had called it Arcane Lion. And I think one of our listeners in the old era had noted that it's the reference to the region of the world, Leon.
Yes, yes. No, I totally just did that on purpose. I would like an Arcane Lion mount, please.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Seems very World of Warcraft coded. So anyways, you know, there has been a response to this from games workers in various ways. One of the ways that they have responded to the restructure is that the union, the Communication Workers of America, known as CWA, and CWA Canada have filed unfair labor complaints against Microsoft. They've stated that the management should have been required to bargain with the union over layoffs. And CWA Canada spokesperson further elaborated, saying that Microsoft was unlawfully firing Xbox workers. In addition, current and former ZeniMax employees held rallies outside of their various ZeniMax studios as part of a Save the Devs march. You know, in particular, Bethesda and id were hit very hard with the layoffs.
Yeah, you know, we've gotten conflicting. Yeah, right. We've gotten some conflicting reports. Certain people who have left id are saying that they can't imagine how id is going to continue shipping products to such a degree that they kind of had to like put out a press release basically saying like, yep, we're going to continue releasing products. So we'll see. But I really was shocked by how hard id was hit in particular. It really, to me, illustrated that these cuts were not merit-based, that a lot of these studios that were fully in the black and were not generating negative revenue, they were not a drain on the larger picture, were still seeing cuts. I think that's particularly egregious because it's like you're literally cutting your workforce that is producing the product you make money on, and you're cutting people to try and make money, but you're really just cutting off your own future. You're selling your own future for short-term gains. It's in the office management world I used to inhabit, that was kind of a real red flag. And I don't understand why Microsoft is choosing to chase bad money with good by liquidating their human assets this way. It just doesn't make sense to me. This is one of those things where they had kind of like a strong Summer Games Fest show. And then as we noted last episode, like even just a couple weeks later, it's like, okay, I don't know how much I really believe in Microsoft's Xbox future anymore.
Yeah, it's like Microsoft's like, yeah, it's great. And then you're like, ooh, who blew up the bathroom?
Ah, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, there were like a lot of stories too about id and stuff that if we had more time, that there were we could have done episode about this. Honestly,
we already had a jam-packed episode without news, and then we felt that there was so much important news we had to talk about it. We may try to find a way to dig a little deeper into some of these topics later in the future. Yeah, because there's a lot. Anyway, please keep going.
Fans have also been outspoken about this for good reason, and, you know, it's good to see, though. Again, I would have loved to see more of this energy behind the BDS boycott as well, but as you said, kind of out of sight, out of mind, right? It impacts us directly when it's our video game devices. But anyway, a few days ago, when this article went up on Aftermath, the top trending post on Xbox's player feedback portal was, "End studio closures and stop the cycle of layoffs." So, you know, was getting a lot of traction. But interestingly, as of the time of this recording, I did go over to the Xbox player feedback portal, and it's not even on the front page. How convenient. Yeah, as you were alluding to, there's honestly so much to say here, and we unfortunately don't really have the time for it on this show roll. I suspect we will inevitably have to have a What Happened to Xbox episode. Obviously, our hearts go out to everyone impacted by the significant restructure.
Yeah.
But I also just want to point out that, you know, corporations becoming mega conglomerates like Xbox did, buying up all these studios, it's not sustainable. And also, I don't think that Asha Sharma should be fully exonerated here. It's very complex, but just consider the fact that Microsoft put a woman of color in this position to do the dirty work. Probably so conveniently white men won't get blamed for it, but I'm going to blame them anyway.
Yeah, I do increasingly believe that Asha Sharma was put here to be the face of the shit sandwich. I think I said that last episode, but it really seems increasingly apparent given that just days after talking about, you know, how great Xbox is doing and how bright the future is, talking about 3,600 layoffs and or 3,200 layoffs and 1,600 people who are going to be impacted in the future. Like, girl, be serious. So yeah, no, as you say, we cannot put it all on her feet. She was put in this place to take this ire, and we should not let these powerful white men do that. To me, but though, also, it's more also, of an and rather than an or.
Yeah.
Asha also, Sharma and these sons of bitches.
We do have to remember that Asha Sharma came from the AI division. So, like, you know, she kind of made her choices.
Oh, yeah, her hands are already stained in blood.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, that's not all in the big news of layoffs.
Yeah, well, given the announcement of the ending of live content for Destiny 2, which we talked about last week, and I think we may have even mentioned, you know, that there were some unfortunate buzz that, you know, obviously things aren't going to be able to keep going at Bungie without Destiny in full production. The other shoe dropped on that story, and Bungie on June 25th was effectively cut in practically in half by Sony. Around 300 jobs were cut. That was nearly the entire Destiny 2 team. In addition, contractors for Destiny and Marathon were also hit by cuts, as well as portions of the Marathon live team. It is worth noting that it's being reported a lot of older team members that were able to take like severance packages and early retirements rather than layoffs per se. But also, I personally know multiple people who were impacted by this. So it was definitely a massive layoff event. It's just absolutely horrible. We're going to link you to an article over on Forbes, as we call it. That is, of course, Forbes.com. We'll link you over at GameBuoy.org.
Forbes.com over on GameBuoy.org.
This one is written by Paul Tassi. And I will say, I'm not always a fan of every article that Paul publishes. However, for live service games, I have typically found him to be a very reliable leaker. And that goes all the way back to the days of the Marvel Avengers game. So he has noted that he doesn't believe Destiny 3 is likely to be in development at this moment in this environment. And he doesn't even think it's possible that the game could be done by this workforce. And unfortunately, he is someone who's positioned well enough that I'm inclined to believe that. So things are not looking good over at Bungie, which is a major bummer. Our hearts and thoughts go out to everybody who's been impacted by these horrible, horrible cuts. And there's also a part of me that's like, if you're interested in Marathon, you might want to check it out sooner than later, because we know none of these games are forever anymore. Slacky, I'm begging for some dopamine over here. Do you got anything?
Well, I do have some happier news. Are you ready for a pretty party, dude? So, we got we got word from NIS America that Mina de Poito Prini Sugoroku, which is the upcoming party game starring the Prinis of Disgaea fame, is getting a Western release. It'll be called Prini Party Going Overboard. The game is releasing in Japan on November 12th for Switch 2, PS5, and PC via Steam. However, we do not yet have a release window for the Western release, so stay tuned for more information about that. Sounds really fun. We love a Prini, so looking forward to this. You know, we love a party.
Yeah. You know, Sugoroku is the same type of party game as like the Coldcept series, which just in fact had a new release, Coldcept Beginnings or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for this. This is definitely one that I'd like to have a Game Buoy Party Games Party type event for.
Oh, absolutely. Game Buoy Party Games Party Games Party Remake.
And in fact, you know, another game that fits that exact mold is Marvel Tokon Fighting Souls. And in fact, Sony Interactive and Arc System Works have announced that they are hosting an open beta for the game next weekend, which is part of why we wanted to make sure to talk about it this week. That's going to be from July 24th to 26th. It will be on PlayStation and PC. The open beta is going to feature 15 playable characters, which is exciting, from the total 20 in the final game. But most exciting for a lot of us is that this is actually going to be the first opportunity we get to demo the game's story mode, or as it's called in game, episode mode. And it was also announced this week that superstar comics writer Kieran Gillen is going to be writing the story mode. So I'm really excited for this now. I often don't even play through story modes in fighting games just because that's not really what I'm coming to fighting games for. But Gillen is literally one of my like top three, probably top two comics writers right now. So this for me is major, major, major. If you're into comics, this might be good news for you too, right? Because Kieran Gillen is contributing a story to a fighting game. And given his past writing in the games space, I expect he will have some good ideas on how to make that narrative compelling and fun. So I'm stoked.
Absolutely.
I will say I took this off my wish list for PlayStation and added it to my wish list for PC. I think I'm serious. I'm not gonna do PlayStation anymore.
Yeah. When you said it was going to be on PC, I was like, oh, thank God. Because I literally have not turned off my PS5 Pro in weeks.
And yeah, so I think for me, this open beta test is like, as long as it runs well on my PC, and by all accounts, I actually think my PC is better than a PS5 anyway. I'm not really a PC gamer typically, but it's, I've been pushed that way. Here's the thing. My strong preference is to have the option to be able to play physical games. But if I have to go digital, then I'd much rather just go Steam, where I have been buying digital games for more than a decade and do feel comfortable with my library, rather than with someone like Sony, whom my access has not been consistent. It feels like every generation, it's a big question mark of if my old games are going to work anymore or not. And we have lost games and functions that I feel like we shouldn't have, like how the PS4 had support for all kinds of PS1 classics that weren't supported on PS5. It's like, WTF, guys, we already have this functionality. Why can't you bring this over too? Come on.
Bye.
Yeah. So yeah, I didn't mean to bring it back to the Sony drama, but we did.
Sorry about it.
Right. Anyway, let's move forward, talk about some release dates. This first one is the Western release of Hard Edge Warzone. This is July 23rd, so probably right around the time you're listening to this episode. This is the kind of weird reimagining of Trag that we had previously discussed. Trag being the, like, PS1 era anime Resident Evil clone with spies. This specific reimagining is more of like a Metal Gear Acid card game type using the original game's art assets. The original game, and we will get to this in our retro release updates schedule, but Trag got a console archives release. So it is also, it's available now if you're interested in or have nostalgia for that release. We also got word that the Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion Remastered will be releasing on Switch 2 on August 11th. This was kind of an exciting announcement because it came out of nowhere and it came right on the heels of the big announcement of Sony cutting their physical publishing. And meanwhile, Bethesda's like, oh, hey, by the way, guys, Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion Remastered, not just coming out for Switch 2, but it's a full game on cart, benches. I'm like, I don't even really want to mess with Bethesda right now, but I kind of want to get that full game on cart, Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We also have word here that Onimusha, Way of the Swords release date has been moved up to September 4th. This is kind of funny because it was rumored to be happening before it was confirmed. And then Capcom was like, no, that's not happening. And then like a week later was like, oops, it's happening. That having been said, if you're looking forward to the game like I am, I guess we're going to be playing it a little early as they do their best to get out of Grand Theft Auto 6's release window. Likewise, Hot Wheels Infinite Rush's release date has been moved up to September 10th. I kind of love having these release dates moved up, so I'm not going to complain too much. We got word that Castlevania Belmont's Curse for Switch is going to be launching alongside the others on October 15th. When it had been originally announced, it was announced as coming at a later date from the others, so this is really exciting. Yeah. And last, but certainly not least, we have word that Rattatan, this is the spiritual successor to Patapon, has been delayed from its full release. It does still have the early access release on PC, I believe, to October 15th for the full release. So please continue joining me and looking forward for that. We also have a pretty hefty slate of retro release updates. I'm going to do my best to make quick work of this. Let's see. We had back on June 25th, we had Bokosuka Wars for the NES. This is an old ASCII RPG from 1985. A lot of people view it as like sort of like the original, like OG Famicom RPG. Unfortunately, it does not have English text support, so it's kind of like, it's cool that it's here, but from our perspective, it's a little bit more of a novelty. That seems to be the case with a lot of these console archives releases that weren't released in North America. They just don't have any English support. I'm still glad we have the option to access them. For some games, the lack of text support isn't an issue, but for some, typically RPGs, it can be. Let's see, we had the console archives release on July 2nd of Trag. This was the PS1 game by Sunsoft from 1998, as we had just been discussing. We have the arcade archives release on that same day of Ladybug, no relation to the recently deceased. It was an arcade game published by Universal in 1981. We then also got a Nintendo Switch Online Classics update for the Game Boy set on July 7th. We got Sword of Hope, Fortified Zone, and Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land. Those are actually three fairly major titles for Game Boy aficionados. For the Game Boy Advance platform, we got Dr. Mario Plus Puzzle League.
Nice.
Let's see, then for console archives on July 9th, we got Rhapsody, a musical adventure. This is the PS1 Nippon Ichi strategy RPG from 1998. We also got the arcade archives release that day of the Combat Racer Hyper Crash. This was an arcade game by Konami from 1987. It's a, you know, drivey wheelie guy where you're also encouraged to be ramming into other cars, ramming them off the road in order to get speed ups and armor ups and sometimes like little attacky bits. It's a vibe. I mean, you know, it's definitely very basic. Let's just put it like that. But it's still cute to see in terms of like where games like Twisted Metal came from. I think you can definitely see the origins in games like Hyper Crash. The console archives release for this past week on July 16th was Hercules No Aiko 2 for the NES. That was a Data East published game from 1989. And the arcade archives release was Civalion. This was a interesting shoot 'em up slash labyrinth explorer. This was published by Taito in 88, and it almost gives like a The Guardian Legend type vibes, but in an arcade setting. It also, for the era, had like really very smooth animation with like big sprites. it's just definitely very interesting, even if as a gameplay, as a game, it's a little bit of kind of like a token taker and not necessarily the most fairly designed game I have played. All of this having been done and said, we're already running a little longer in the tooth than I would necessarily like, but it's time to go to the club.
Ooh, we better rush to the club.
Culture club. 3 a.m. Let's do shots.
Don't tell Yosuke if you brought poppers to the club, because he may have something to say about that. So first up in the club, we have some more information coming out regarding Persona 4 Revival. So at Anime Expo, the producer of Persona 4 Revival, Kazuhisa Wada, was discussing that how there won't be significant story changes, but one thing that they did look at was how in the original games that Yosuke was a bit insensitive in terms of how he treats outsiders, in his words. Although he did not elaborate, reading between the lines, you know, this is certainly suggesting that they will be toning down his, what many of us feel was, blatant homophobia present in the original games. You know, threatening to beat the shit out of Kanji when they had the camping trip in the tent. This, of course, is also of interest because there was that scrap dialogue suggesting that he was actually originally planned to be a romance option and that he had, you know, internalized homophobia, and that's what was causing him to lash out. You know, I don't think that they're going to go so far as to restore this abandoned story thread and be like, bro, that's gay, but only for him to actually be gay, but maybe they could. I just think it's good that P Studios is being more mindful of queer representation and issues in this game, particularly in Persona 4, which, although did have its issues with its representation, the fact that it was talking about issues about gender is, you know, something that we kind of latch onto when we discuss queer issues in gaming. Obviously, I hope that they handle Kanji and Noto in their stories and their explorations of gender and gender roles and gender identity. It seems like their hearts are in the right place. We'll see if they stick the landing, though.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Like you said, I think it's really positive to see that P Studios is even talking about and thinking about this now. It could be a very good sign. If not for Persona 4 Revival, then at least for what is coming with Persona 6, right?
Persona 6, all gay.
Ooh, I hope so. All right, let's see. We have word here that Hasbro has won the major license to make Legend of Zelda toys, action figures, and more starting next year. The first slate of products are expected to be revealed next weekend at the San Diego Comic-Con. It looks like that's going to be a reveal of 3 6-inch figures that I think we're all broadly expecting to tie into the Zelda movie, but we don't know that yet. I am
like Zelda and canon.
I mean, right? That is the obvious. I wouldn't mind if it was Sheik, Zelda, and Link, or Sheik, Link, and Ganon. That having been said, we're eventually going to get all of these characters, I'm sure. I'm a big fan of the 6-inch figure format. Between the G.I. Joe Classified, of whom I have only a couple of figures and only ever will have a couple of figures. It's complicated. It was a gift to my inner child because I wanted to marry Duke when I was a child, but I got punished for telling my parents that. So I got myself a Duke figure.
Aww.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. But I have a ton of like Marvel Legends and other 6-inch format figures.
Love a 6-incher.
I do. I love a 6 inches. Yeah. So I'm excited for this. It's a little more than I want to be talking about video game toys, though. So I'm going to move forward. We will obviously keep you posted about whatever figures do get announced this week, and we'll post links probably to next week's episode when that eventually exists. That having been said, the next news story to talk about is about Dying Light. Unfortunately,
more like Dying Light, consoles.
Yes, unfortunately. Basically, Dying Light the Beast has been canceled for PS4 and Xbox One. Basically, Techland, who released Dying Light the Beast last year for current gen consoles, They basically said that the older consoles can no longer handle the experience that they set out to create, that this wasn't really a matter of them choosing to leave those platforms behind. They're just, you know, they're outmoded. We've talked about this here on the show, and I have to be honest, I actually do think that when we've gotten to where we are now, where these boxes are more than 10 years old, they're like 13 years old. It's like, yeah, I think that is a fair time to start making people phase out. I hate when people are getting phased out on boxes that are relatively brand new, but 13 years old, yeah, I actually think that's fair. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
Ow, my bones, I'm old.
Ah, right, there is that. Well, on a sort of related to multiple of these stories note, the developers of PlayStation 3 emulator RPCS3 promise now that 75% of PlayStation 3 games are now playable on PC. I haven't gotten into PS3 emulation yet. I've heard about people doing PS3 emulation even on like the Steam Deck, though. So the fact that, you know, the main emulator that is used for PS3 emulation is getting so developed is to me a very positive thing, particularly in line with what we were talking about with Frank Cifaldi and everything, and really noting that unfortunately, piracy is the way that these games are getting preserved. And I'll note, there are multiple Sony games that I own, or PS3 games, I should say, that I do own, that I would love to revisit, but like, for reasons I don't understand, those games are no longer available. So being able to revisit them via an emulator would be fantastic. Continuing this conversation, though, I think you had a very fascinating news story that harkens back to like one of the classic gaming culture stories.
Oh, yeah. So this news story might make you ask what year this is, because that's what happened when you linked me the story initially. So a few weeks ago, a plague broke out across Azeroth in World of Warcraft. Sound familiar? In fact, this has been dubbed Corrupted Blood 2.0, after the original infamous Corrupted Blood Plague in WoW. This debuff was called Withering Contagion. Kind of fierce, love it, eat. Interestingly, the mob that inflicts Withering Contagion has actually been in the game for almost 4 years, so not really sure how this happened, but earlier this month, it was spreading actually across the Moonguard server. And then people who were affected were excreting green slimy goo. And, you know, knowing Moonguard, that probably is somebody's kink. Anyway, unlike the weeks-long epidemic that was Corrupted Blood, this one was resolved in a matter of hours. You know, this did make me chuckle a little bit, but it just hits a little bit too close to what's going on in real life the past few years. In this modern era, girl. Speaking
Taylor
of which,
Swift Farms, girl.
Oh, yeah. Hope you haven't eaten any lettuce lately. Talk about a withering contagion and excreting slimy goo.
Ah, it's giving Calling of Stratholm. Remember, ooh, with the tainted wheat?
Ooh, tainted lettuce, girl.
Ah, right.
I bet they would have blamed the Pandaren farmers.
Seriously? Turning your butthole into the Lich King?
Oh, no. We better move on.
We also have word here now that the PS5 has begun being emulated online. Of these emulators, in particular KYTY PS5, which might be Kaitai. I'm not sure how you pronounce that.
Kitty.
It can even boot up some 3D games. Oh my God, is it Kitty PS5?
I have no idea.
Meow. Apparently, though, you know, they're getting to the point of being able to boot games up. I think that's great for all of the reasons, as noted previously. You know, for whole generations before retro games were regularly being sold online, I do remember spreading the gospel of a lot of retro games via emulators. And it really kind of seems like the big three are intent on making that the way of games preservation, because they're really not doing anything to help themselves. And I just again, it's important that emulators exist and that people are doing this work. So I think it's a very good thing to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
We also have word here. And I say we have word here. This is something I'm freaking living. We are, in fact, on high alert. You may recall last episode we talked about how Kingdom Hearts 4 having its trailer at the Switch, or having the Switch 2 announcement trailer at the Nintendo Direct, could well be a sign of a coming ad campaign, or to say the ad machine is going to start up for Kingdom Hearts 4. A lot of us, including myself on air last episode, said that the real sign would be if we got anything for Kingdom Hearts at this summer's D23 event happening in August. And I am very, very happy to tell you a Kingdom Hearts panel has been announced at D23. Right now, we don't technically have the confirmation that we will be getting any new information about Kingdom Hearts 4. We may not be getting a new trailer. However, this panel, A Deep Dive into Kingdom Hearts, is officially described as, join us for a journey through light and darkness as we commemorate 25 years of Kingdom Hearts. Discover how this saga united Disney, Pixar, and Square Enix, with insights from the creative minds, character voices, and more behind the magic. The thing is, traditionally, when Kingdom Hearts has shown up at D23, they have had trailers for new worlds. Typically, it's new Disney worlds is what we get announced at D23. We've never even had a full panel before. This is almost like a step up in presence at D23. So we don't have an announcement of a new trailer, but it would be weird not to get one. And it's important to note they're celebrating the 25-year anniversary at this D23 because there won't be a D23 next year, leading many to wonder, could Kingdom Hearts 4 even be scheduled for release before the 2028 D23? There's a lot to wonder, a lot to ponder, and many of us have reached a fever freaking pitch.
We should have been invited to be on that panel, just saying.
Let's see. We have a really interesting article here from Games Radar. We'll link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Sean Layden this is the former PlayStation head, has basically talked about how, because of the way that the AAA games development market has gone, that basically we've lost a lot of the variety that used to exist in the games space, and that games are really developing a much more homogenized appearance and gameplay style. I think that these thoughts are really worth thinking about and looking into. It's, of course, why we'll link you. That having been said, I don't want to ruminate too long on this. It's just interesting to note, Sean Layden notes, they had so many crazy Sony-published games in the PS1 era. I think that's something a lot of us in the modern era often lament. So I think it's interesting to note that even their former heads are seeing it too.
Indeed.
And then the last one I'll report on before I throw the spotlight your way, Slaggy. This is one I was really happy to hear because I do often, I must confess, think about what a game I would make might look like. I often look at what engines I might use to make a game. If I were going to use an engine, I would need them to ban AI coding, particularly if they were an open sourced engine. So you can imagine my delight when I read that the open source game engine Godot has banned all AI code and will require, quote, all code to be human authored, following what they described as an AI code shit show. I'm really stoked about this. As noted, I had already been looking into Godot for some, with the idea of making a game. There's no reason to talk all vague about it. And so to hear that they are, you know, they took an even-handed approach. They did initially allow, I guess, some amount of AI-authored code if it could be corrected. Ultimately, that turned out not to work. People who were submitting this code were not able to correct it themselves, which is, in my opinion, a foreseeable conclusion, but I understand why, in good faith, they had to give it a shot. And now they've read the room and are banning that shit. I think that's wonderful. It does make me want to pursue this engine, and who knows, maybe someday something will come of it. Slaggy, do you have any thoughts?
Game Buoy Studios.
Could be. Do you have any thoughts on Godot banning AI code?
No, that's good. And, you know, I don't think I have the executive functioning to actually make a game as much as I would like to. So
that's why I often think about it, but rarely attempt to execute on it.
Right. So closing out our time at the club, we have word that Nintendo and From Software will be holding a closed network test for the Dustbloods from August 21st to 23rd. If you want to participate, you'll have to sign up on the official site beginning on July 22nd. So just about the time that this episode goes up. If you are interested in participating in the 5 playtest sessions over that weekend, and you have a Switch 2 and Nintendo Switch Online, you should probably go check that out and indicate your interest.
Yeah. You know, for me, one of the most interesting things about this is that we basically know nothing about the Duskbloods yet. So people, I mean, are basically going to be playing this game when we know basically nothing about it. I think that's really exciting. And I am inclined to sign up for the beta just so I can be a part of that first wave of seeing what's up with the game altogether.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, I've stated that From Software stuff's not really my thing, but very cool that we will soon have more information.
Indeed.
Enough of the club. I think we have to go somewhere else.
All right, let's go to Idaho.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
All right, first up, we have word from Bandai Namco that they are bringing Once Upon a Katamari to the Switch 2, along with some previously Apple Arcade exclusive content, which was featured in the Rolling Live game. This will be a paid DLC called Rolling Live Highlights. Both the game and the add-on will be coming on October 8th. It will be available as a physical copy, but however, it will be a game key card, unfortunately. But the Switch version will also get a free update to have access to the free features.
Excellent. You know, I'm really excited about this. I've talked in prior weeks, like when Square Enix has announced sort of the consolification of some of their mobile games. I really think it's a great thing when we get the content made for exclusively for these mobile versions ported to the console versions or to separate console versions, you know, whatever is appropriate, to other platforms. I have Once Upon a Katamari on PS5. I am thinking though that I'm going to start looking into like when it goes on sale on Switch 2, I'm going to grab it and jump over to that platform instead and, you know, get to play Rolling Live there now. That's exciting.
Same here.
Let's see. We also have word here, and this is a little bit of a rooster tease, but unfortunately, we don't know who it is. Basically, Guilty Gear Strive this winter is going to be getting a new guest character as a part of its DLC season. That's all we know, though. So it could be at this point, given some of the various IP that Arc System Works has worked with and collaborated with and done guest characters now. Like, it could be anyone. It could be someone from a live action movie. It could be someone from an anime. It could be someone from a manga. It could be someone from another fighting game. This could be any freaking thing. So I guess keep your eyes out for this winter. I know I am. Did you have any thoughts on the Guilty Gear Strive guest DLC mystery?
I just, I'm like, I hope it's someone gay.
All right.
I mean, and because this arc system works, it could be.
Yeah, it very well could be. Let's see. We also got the announcement. This is a really weird but awesome story of a new character for Blaze Blue Central Fiction. No, you did not hear that incorrect. This is the
older, right?
This is the older Blaze Blue game, the last one from before it went into a spin-off series. They have announced that they are doing a new character. At this time, we don't have gameplay footage of the new character, but they made the announcement and it's coming. So please look forward to it. I think that's really exciting. And to me, I think it signals that maybe we're going to get a new Blaze Blue at some point and it will be a non-crossover Blaze Blue. I think that would be cool. Obviously, I have no problem with the crossover Blaze Blue games. I would like to see actual Blaze Blue again.
Yeah, that takes us back a little bit.
Yeah. And then I think you had a cute little update too.
Indeed, we have the announcement of the latest Pokemon Pokopia event, which actually starts today, the day we are recording. So by the time you listen to this, it will be active. This is Zorua's Hide and Sneak contest. This is something that you can already do in the game. It's part of the story mission in Bleak Beach. So if you played through it, you probably already experienced Hide and Sneak, but this is now tied to an in-game activity for earning trophies. So if you're interested, it'll be running until July 27th, and it sounds super cute.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I haven't participated in this one yet, even though I've seen people online, so I think it's going now as of like today, maybe.
Yeah,
but
today.
Yeah, so but it sounds cute. I just haven't, you know, done it. I will probably do it as soon as we finish this episode in 7 hours.
Oh no.
Right. So with that in mind, I think we also had some controversial stuff happen this week. How could we not? Right. So let's move on to So Controversial.
Controversial.
Oh my god.
Yeah, this first one was very strange. We had word that a streamer had his Xbox account and his OneDrive account wrongfully suspended, which sucks. He not only lost thousands of euros worth of digital games, but also his son's baby pictures. I mean, I probably would have backed up baby pictures on a thumb drive or something, but it's still messed up that this even happened.
Well, yeah, the way that they do OneDrive altogether is already so weird. Like, I agree, and I try very hard to keep all of my stuff backed up. But with the weird way that Windows forces OneDrive integration, he thought it was stored locally.
True. So it's unfortunate that this was even a thing. I wasn't trying to pass judgment, but
yeah, for sure.
I was a little surprised.
And like I said, I would also try to back it up. I can't say for sure that he didn't. He just might have thought it was, and it turned out just to be in the OneDrive or whatever.
Yeah, so, you know, he was able to get his baby pictures back, thankfully, but, you know, he followed up and said that he feels kind of slighted by Microsoft and that the only reason they actually made a point to work on restoring his content is because his story went viral, and if it hadn't, it would have been like, LOL, sorry. So, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. You know, I see people online talking about things like that happening to them. And to a certain degree, it's always, you know, oh, is this really happening? Is this, you know, a troll? Is this a bot? But increasingly, I feel like we're hearing stories of people getting just completely shit customer service and losing access to stuff because, oh, yeah, it was like a AI bot on the customer helpline and they weren't able to help me at all. It's getting crazy. It's frankly one of the reasons why I want to consolidate to Steam, because I've at least had personally very good experiences with Steam.
Indeed.
Let's see. We also have word here. Oh, yeah, this was one that I was kind of big mad about. Star Ocean, the second story R, has released as a Switch 2 version.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it is a not exactly full price release, but it's like $50. It has no upgrade pack for owners of the game on Switch 1, and no way to transfer your save from the Switch 1 version to the Switch 2 version. So if you have it on Switch 1 already, there it's literally like, F you, buy the whole game all over again or don't play it. It feels bad, man, right? It feels bad. And Octopath Traveler 1 and 2 for Switch 2 were announced. And it's the same thing. No upgrade pack, no save transfer. So it's just kind of a major bummer that this keeps happening, particularly with these Square Enix titles. I think that Nintendo has proven that the audience is comfortable, whether it's right or wrong, with $5 to $10 upgrade packs. I think it's a reasonable compromise. So when I see this, it really just looks to me like publisher greed, and I really hate it. I really hate it, because there is a product you could be doing, or a way you could be doing this, that's way more equitable, that we are so far been pretty happy to participate in. It just doesn't feel like Square Enix is trying to meet their audience halfway at all on this one, and I think that's a bummer.
So apparently there's drama in Beautiful Boyland, by which I mean in the Otome game Love in Deep Space, which is available for Android, iOS, there was the announcement of a sexy Wolfman character named Valco, but now the developers have removed references to him from their Discord and the website, and apparently there are no longer plans to add any more dateable boys, and it seems that some people are upset with it, but then you were telling me there's like this whole other dynamic in the fandom that's very interesting, shall we say?
Well, yeah, it's look, there's a lot of layers to this, and I don't feel comfortable digging into all of them because I'm not a member of this community. I am someone who was looking into joining this community when Valco was added. So I have a very interesting perspective because I have seen some of the weirdness firsthand. Basically, this game is aimed towards women. Obviously, a lot of gay men still enjoy Otomo games. I don't think that's a surprise. You know, we still just, you know, insert ourselves mentally into the place of the character or whatever. But there's just been like a real insular gatekeepy vibe from the fandom that has really seemed very negative towards new people coming in, very negative towards this new character being added for, frankly, a lot of aesthetic judgments that don't make sense to me. I'd seen a lot of discussion on him not being like pretty enough for the game. And meanwhile, for me, I'm like, this is, by my definition, like, extremely pretty, pretty boy. Like, what are you talking about? But there's just a lot of layers to it. There's some uncomfortable layers that might even include some homophobia socially, frankly. It's just really weird. But I think for me, the biggest note is that it's very strange that the developers decided the best way to proceed is that they're just straight up not going to add any more new boys then. That's crazy to me. I know one of the complaints from the fandom had been that the boys that were already in the game weren't having their stories completed already. And, you know, so I guess this is them. They're saying, okay, we're going to put the work in on the other boys' stories. But I don't know. The whole thing just seems so toxic on every level. It was like a toxic beginning, a toxic middle, and a toxic end. Yikes.
Yeah.
We had word as well, and this was one that I saw kind of rippling across the social, the timeline last week, I should say. Basically, last Saturday morning, Ubi's servers went down, and as a result, a lot of their games that use the Ubi Connect service could not connect and thus couldn't play. Unfortunately, this includes games that are supposed to be fully offline, like Assassin's Creed Black Flag Resynced. And beforehand, people had noted, like, hey, Ubi, how come Black Flag Resynced has to connect to Ubi Connect? And Ubi had told players who were concerned that, like, oh, it's not going to be a worry. The game is completely offline. It'll still run if it can't connect. Don't worry. But no, sure as shit, when their servers weren't up, people weren't able to connect and play their own game that they correctly owned. Once again, leaving pirates with a better product. I hate these DRM choices because it's not, nobody is benefiting from it. Let's put it that way. Nobody is benefiting from it. And it just makes people not want to support your shitty shit.
Yeah, that's effed up.
And then we also have a very interesting and upsetting story that also has a slight homophobic angle. This is a story about a Robert Yang game. This is a interesting one for me to talk about in the sense that I actually have this creator's games in my Steam library already. So when I went to see the way that they were being censored as detailed in this article, basically Radiator Forever is the new format in which Radiator games are being published under Robert Yang. These are typically the homoerotic games. We've talked about these games before. But basically, this game is being hidden from people who search for gay content and even, you know, the game pretty directly, due to the way that the game hides games with adult content. But something that's worth noting is that games like Cyberpunk 2077 or Baldur's Gate 3, which literally have people slang and dong, you know, with, during the character customization scenes even, they don't get hidden in this way. So it's just a really frustrating and interesting story about how these Robert Yang games are being censored on Steam's searchability functions. Again, I wasn't able to have that exact experience because for me, when I loaded it up, it was literally already in your library from previous games of his that I had downloaded through Steam in the past. But it's still obviously of a concern as we are entering an era where censors are increasingly making it difficult to find marginalized communities in media. I believe you have a story that was important to you as well.
Yeah, so this was one that I saw being discussed online, and there's a few layers to it. So this was about the announcement that Games Done Quick, which of course is the speedrunning community that has raised a lot of money for charity, and you know they do great work.
Yeah, we've talked about them. We're big fans.
Yeah, our very own Vogs, Bobby Blackwolf, is also involved with a lot of the GDQ stuff. So, you know, we're big fans of the work they do and the charitable stuff they do. They unfortunately came under fire recently when they posted about it being excited to work with SNK. You can already kind of see where this is going. There was going to apparently be a speedrunning event in the works to celebrate Metal Slug's 30th anniversary. So, you know, we've talked on the show multiple times over the past year since we've been back on the air about how the ownership of SNK by Saudi Games Entertainment Funds and all that raises ethical concerns due to the human rights violations that occur in that region. So after backlash from the community, which I think was warranted, and that might be a little bit of my controversial opinion here, that I think it was right for people to call them out, you know. They did announce that after just a few hours that they would not be pursuing this partnership further, and they apologized for the oversight that, you know, that that shouldn't have happened. So there's the layer of controversy with the SNK, but then, you know, an additional layer of that that a lot of folks were really upset about is that this is a lost fundraising opportunity for GDQ to try to help a charitable cause. And, you know, I do think that it is unfortunate that this is a consequence of the decision that was made in the first place. For what it's worth, I think that GDQ did the right thing by backing out of the partnership. I think they've learned an important lesson. I also think it's okay for folks to make mistakes and learn from them. You know, it's a consequence, and it's just unfortunate. You know, a lot of the conversation I saw online also was broadly bringing up points about big corporations and capitalism and where our money goes. And I think these are all very important things to be talking about and a real part of our hobby that we're, you know, talking about on the show. So I do think that there are things to say, but we do need to move on.
Yeah. I do feel the need to comment here just very briefly. The thing is, I think people get the... Well, the thing is, I just realized how deep into our show we are, so we really do need to continue moving.
Yeah.
The thing is, people get really touchy about charity functions, and I understand why that is. But it remains important that we not allow known bad actors to launder their image through acts of charity like this. I saw a lot of people saying, you know, there's no difference between SNK and, you know, Nintendo or Capcom because, you know, the same ownership who fully owns SNK owns major minority stakes in those other companies because they have had their various tendrils working to get into the game space for a while. And SNK, they snapped up in full and, you know, they grabbed little 1, 2, 3, 5 percenters here and there. Frankly, my preference would be for Zero to go to any of those of those ownership partners, if possible. I agree with you. That would be best. The compromise for me is that, like, I'm still willing to fuck with Nintendo because it's like a 5% interest in their overall, whereas with SNK, it's 100%. And I do think that context makes a really big difference. I think there's a real tendency right now in Western cultures, I'll just say in America, to look at things in a vacuum and to assume that, you know, only the point that you're talking about right now is important. And like, you're going to win this argument because it's an argument and it's a competition. And it's like, no, dude, none of these things exist in a vacuum. It is all systems upon systems upon systems that touch each other. And when I talk about a problem here, it's because it's also a problem there. And this problem is there and there. And if we start fixing them, we wouldn't have a need, for example, for charity in the first place. So
yeah,
just people get weird about charity. A lot of people view charity as like, I make my charitable contributions, therefore I'm a good person. But it's like, it's just not that simple. And in the matter of a corporate entity like SNK, who has come 100% under the ownership of known international bad actors who have done things, including but not limited to murder of journalists whom should have been, you know, protected for what they were doing, it's important that we stand on business. And I don't think falling into an ideological fallacy because you're more concerned about winning the argument than, again, being ideologically consistent is helpful to anyone.
Yeah, all I have to say is that, like, would it make all of J.K. Rowling's transphobic actions and harm that she's done to the trans community, if it was like, oh, well, we're going to do a Hogwarts Legacy stream, but we're going to donate all the funds that we're raising to, like, the Trans Lifeline or other, like, trans charities. Like, I don't know. So anyway, I heard that there's a TCG mess.
Yeah, again. Basically, there was a new Pokemon TCG anniversary set coming because, you know, it's been 5 years since the last one. It is starting to get a little bit silly in terms of, like, if you do it every 5 years, it's not that big of a deal to me. However, basically, in order to try and ensure a fair distribution of sales opportunities and basically, you know, ensure that everyone gets a chance to buy a little, the Pokemon company's sale website had a lot of, like, digital queues and captchas and waiting screens. Unfortunately, as a direct result of that, a lot of real users ended up getting repeated errors, got flagged as bots for trying multiple times to get in line. A lot of players were unable to get cards. I saw this happening widely across my timeline and saw multiple publications talking about it. This was, of course, the pre-order for the set. The thing is, online on, like, TCG Player, for example, a lot of scalpers did still appear to get their sets and their pre-orders locked in. So it looks like this system just hurt everyone and helped nobody except the scalpers, which still counts as hurting everybody.
Yeah.
Which to me is the perfect transition to doom and gloom.
Doom
Yeah, so this first one is about ZAUM Studios, ZA/UM, Zaum, ZAUM, Zaum. I don't really know how they pronounce it. Anyways, they're the studios that made Disco Elysium. They have served redundancy or at-risk notices impacting up to 32 of their colleagues across all departments, as they stated. Following a lack of financial success for their latest game, which was apparently critically acclaimed, it called Zero Parades for Dead Spies. I was going to say, this is just...
Say this next talking point, and then I'll say a thing.
yes, because this is just yet another setback for ZAUM. ZAUM. There was all that controversy with the separation of some of the co-founders with the company, and, you know, it was just very messy. So this is just, this isn't good either.
Well, yeah. So the thing is, basically, a lot of the creators of Disco Elysium got pushed out by corporate interests and are, you know, no longer with the company, and they wanted to be. And so that exact reason is why a lot of us fans of Disco Elysium, and I am a fan, it's one of the rare games I bought on Steam when it was not dirt cheap because I wanted to play it so bad. I skipped this game, and many of us others did, because of this controversy that you referenced there. So it's really tricky. I wanted this game to, I don't want to say that I wanted it to fail. I wanted it obviously to do well enough to sustain the studio, but I didn't want it to be a hit. I did not plan on playing it now, so I did not purchase it. I don't feel guilty for these layoffs in that sense, but the flip is, like, I do wish that all of this stuff hadn't happened. I wish these layoffs hadn't happened. I wish the co-founders hadn't been pushed out of the company. The whole freaking thing is terrible.
Yeah, it's all terrible. As everyone always, anytime we talk about layoffs, our heart goes out to anyone affected. You know, at this point, Doom and Gloom basically is the segment where we talk about layoffs and mobile service games ending their service. Speaking of which, Captain Spike, you have some things to share. And this first one actually kind of was a shock for me.
Hey, I actually have a Doom and Gloom story that isn't about a cancellation of games services. Games services cancellation stories to get through first. The first one, like you said, is a shocker. This is word that Mario Kart Tour is ending service on September 29th. I'm not surprised that we got these announcements all bunched together the way we did, just because of how the fiscal year lines up. I'm surprised that all three of these games are ending, though. Like, all three of these were shockers in different ways. For Mario Kart Tour, they had announced back in 2023 that it was going into a maintenance mode, basically.
Right.
And that's when they added the anniversary tour. And so it's been running in that mode for like 3 years. And they removed, you know, the gacha and the stuff from the game at that time. So I think all of that stuff was very cool. I think it sucks that they're taking the game down, however. I understand they're no longer making a great deal of money on it or whatever. Okay, you got to do what you got to do. But I'm really hoping we get an announcement soon of these tracks getting ported in a, you know, more racer-friendly mode to Mario Kart World or something, right? You know, the way that we got some of these tracks in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Because otherwise, yeah, this is a ton of Mario Kart content that's about to become permanently inaccessible to people.
Yeah, I really liked those World Tour maps that they added into the expansion pass for 8 Deluxe. And I did play Mario Kart Tour for a while back in the day. You probably remember me talking about it a little bit on the show. Like, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was a good implementation. I thought it was better than a mobile version of Mario Kart had any right to be. Just not my, you know, not my ideal version of Mario Kart.
Yeah.
So that really sucks. Then we also got the announcement of Final Fantasy XIV Mobile to end service. This is the version of Final Fantasy XIV that is available exclusively on iOS and Android in China. Alongside this cancellation, which is coming on September 30th, the global version has also been canceled and is no longer in development. This had been notable because it was almost like not just a port of Final Fantasy XIV, but almost like someone making an exact Final Fantasy XIV clone, but with like some major differences in terms of like functionally how some of the fashion items and combat worked. Like you had like a dodge roll and things weren't as fully tied to like the 2-minute meta and like the tightly locked rotations that are based, you know, on this cooldown, that cooldown, that cooldown. Frankly, some of the ideas that I think are coming to the full version of the game with the next expansion.
I would love a dodge roll, just saying.
Right? It's my understanding that some of the costumes had like 12 or up to 24 different dye channels based on, you know, the complexity of the armor sets. Like, talking about options that I want in our game.
Yeah, there's also a lot of gacha. I mean, but that's mobile games for you.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and it was somewhat interestingly, my understanding is that the gacha stuff was predominantly fashion and presentation. It was not pay to win, and it's my understanding that actually in the market, whales were looking for more of a pay to win situation and actually found Final Fantasy XIV Mobile to be disagreeable because it wasn't you couldn't whale it basically. So that just sucks on a lot of levels. I was looking forward to experiencing this different version of the game. That having been said, Tencent and Square Enix claim that this was an amicable negotiation. So hopefully in the future, maybe they'll try again and maybe it'll work that time. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember if it was Tencent specifically, but they were originally going to have a Final Fantasy XI mobile game that kind of did a similar spin. And as someone who struggled to ever get into 11, I really had been hoping for that. So plus the fact that, you know, with games preservation, you know, we can hope that 14 lasts forever, at least in our lifetimes. But, you know, at some point, like, I really need this game to be preserved in some way. If it's like an offline edition, pocket edition or whatever, like the story in this game is just so good that like for there to be a mainline Final Fantasy game that is no longer available, same for 11. So I really think long-term there needs to be some consideration of that.
Yeah.
I guess it's time Final Fantasy 14 Resonance.
Well, yeah, I was going to say this is where the consoleification of mobile games probably also could apply to other forms of live service games. Turn those live service games into games with standard leveling arcs and narrative arcs. Smooth out some of your mechanics that had been made to be very grindy so that they're fun now. I'm thinking about so many games that you could take that approach and actually make them be like worth engaging again. Like even shit like, what was that, Babylon's Gate or whatever, the Platinum Games game that got Babylon's Fall, I think was the name of it, that it was a live service game Square Enix canned after 3 months.
We might even see Ebony get a console location.
You joke, but I really do. I think as many games as possible should, that's such a good, to me, such a good solution to like the game's preservation question for these live service games, is like, make a version that's an offline version. People want that shit. I mean, look at Dragon Quest X Offline. That's a thing they made in Japan. Like, make that for Final Fantasy XI and eventually 14. Please.
Yes.
Anyway, the third cancellation that we're talking about. This one is going to be coming October 6th. This is the cancellation of Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis. This was the alternate remake of Final Fantasy VII. It was meant to cover the whole Final Fantasy VII timeline, including the original game and the compilation titles. My understanding is that technically that will be true for the last couple of weeks that the game is available for service, as the final chapter updates are apparently going to include the ending of Final Fantasy VII, as well as the first time before Crisis's story has ever been told in English. So if you want to read the events of Before Crisis for the first time, load up Ever Crisis over the next few months for the Before Crisis event. And if you want to see this new take on the original ending of Final Fantasy VII, you know, check out those missions. Otherwise, a little bit disappointing news. I really thought this one was going to last through the release of Final Fantasy VII Revelation, at least. But here we are, another mobile game getting canceled. I hope you didn't put money in it. Yeah. Not you. I know you didn't, but, you know, euphemistically. Yeah.
You did.
No, I did not on this one. I have learned my lesson with Square Enix games. I talked about that with my husband. He and I both put a little bit of money into one of those. I think it was Kingdom Hearts Union Cross. It was already when that ended. It was like, oh, OK, so that's X number of dollars down the toilet. Let's not do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And it has really influenced, like, I'm occasionally willing to, when I was playing Fortnite, I would buy Fortnite stuff. When I play Final Fantasy XIV, I'm occasionally willing to buy Final Fantasy XIV things. But for the most part, ever since the shutdown of Union Cross, it really put a sour taste in my mouth of like, so you're telling me this money that I literally break my back for and that my husband literally breaks his back for, we're literally getting nothing in return right now? Okay, fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the little fucking JPEG that I got to have on my phone for a minute through your app, I don't get access to that anymore? Fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We also have some doom and gloom news that isn't about a game cancellation. This is word that Marathon's game director is stepping down at Bungie. I don't know, technically speaking, that this is connected to the Bungie layoffs. News on this just broke a day or two ago, so, you know, the story hasn't fully developed. I have seen a lot of speculation that, you know, with the full-blown PvE mode that's supposed to be coming in next season, that basically there is legitimately a change in vision for the game incoming. I don't know. I like Bungie a lot. I like their games historically a lot. I've liked a lot of people who have worked at Bungie a lot. I want things to work out for them. I'm not sure Marathon is it, but damn, I really want it to be.
Yeah.
As we continue to drag on and on and on, I believe we have one more segment to get to before we get to our discussion. However, this is always a fun one, gossip, rumor mongering, and all other manners of hearsay. It's time for Rumor Has It.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
Well, hello from the other side. Are you chasing pavements, girl? Well, I'm chasing this rumor that... thanks to a recent leak on the Epic Games Store backend, that Final Fantasy VII Revelation may be getting some story DLC. There is a reference to a story expansion pass, and this suggests that there might be some additional story content released for the game. You know, I really enjoyed Episode Intermission with Yuffie from Remake. I wonder if Yuffie likes Arcane Lion. So I really enjoyed that, and it really made me appreciate Yuffie more than I did in the original game. So I was a little sad when there wasn't any extra story content for Rebirth, so I personally would welcome this.
Well, and so that's part of the big talking point, right, is that a lot of people seem really bummed or upset about this, but I'm with you. I really liked Episode Intermission. And when I think about, like, the larger picture of Final Fantasy VII, like, maybe this is how they would do Episode Dirge of Cerberus or Episode Advent Children and show us what those scenarios might look like in this new timeline, right? So to me, I think that this, based on how they do it or what it is, or maybe it's a new story about a character like Sonon from... Intermission, who I liked enough that I remember that character. So, like, I don't know. I'm very open-minded.
I mean,
curious to see what they do.
It could literally be more of Johnny's Costa del Sol
hotel resort.
All right.
I am a Johnny stan, I'm not gonna lie. But you know, with Evercrisis ending service, plus just like you said, with so much in the larger compilation of Final Fantasy VII, I think there's just a lot of potential here. But you know, knowing that Kingdom Hearts 3 Remind added a whole new metaphysical layer to the already metaphysical ending of Kingdom Hearts 3, I definitely think there's potential here for Nomura harder than he's ever Nomura before.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, right? Because in Remind, you literally are watching from outside of time as the things you did while playing Kingdom Hearts 3 play out. And there's definitely a layer of Final Fantasy VII Remake where I could already see that occurring. So no, I'm very much with you on that.
Yeah, so I'm just appreciative that you gave me a news story that's about a leak from a back end that's actually exciting, because that's not what's been happening in the news lately.
The culling of Shathole.
Oh no. Final Fantasy VII rectal inflammation.
Final Fantasy VII prolapse.
Oh no.
Let's see. We also have a pretty big rumor here. This is one that I'm actually pretty interested in, because this was something that was talked about a lot in the old version of Xbox One that didn't come to pass. Supposedly, Xbox is working on a way to digitize your physical game collection. Basically, what is claimed is that Microsoft is working on a way where you insert your disc for your console to read that you own this disc, and then anytime this disc, or up until this disc enters another console, you basically have the digital entitlement to be playing that disc. The cool thing about this, of course, is that you would then still be able to like let someone borrow the disc, and then once they used it and they were digitally entitled to it, like you wouldn't be able to play it again until you re-entitled yourself to it. But it sort of is giving the functionality of like game key cards and making the physical game discs that many of us have already been collecting over the last decade, but which are still compatible with these boxes, still giving them use, because you can, you know, scan in all your games and get digital access to all of them. That's a really positive and cool thing. According to The Verge, this tech only exists for discs manufactured for Xbox One and for Series X. However, again, it really sounds like Microsoft may have actually implemented that thing they talked about from a tech level and are now working on testing and perhaps someday implementing it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, this is how it should be, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm honestly, this is one of those things where if they do have this locked and loaded in the canon, I think it's a big positive for Microsoft. I am still not I am still not Team Xbox, but if you recall, back in the day, one of the things they did to turn the tides in their favor on the Xbox One had been standing on backwards compatibility. So maybe they'll find another way to stand on legacy that will get some of us to get hooked.
Yep.
Let's see. Last, but definitely not least, as this is another information leak, but coming from typically one of the most reliable leak resources we have, this is an official ratings board. The official ratings board in Brazil published on July 1st and quickly removed online was a Nintendo of America rating for a game called Metroid Ravenous. This would suggest that there is a title called Metroid Ravenous to be published by Nintendo of America in 2026 that has been submitted for publishing to the official ratings board of Brazil. This is not the kind of thing that is likely to have been faked. It is almost certainly a genuine Nintendo leak. One of the other knock-on interesting pieces here is that multiple generally reliable leakers suggested that this wasn't the only 2026 Metroid project we might see. So definitely keep your eyes and ears out for these ones. All of this having been done, And all of this having been said, I think we are just about ready for me to hand the reins to you so that we can have a discussion about the Summer Game Fest Side B.
Now time for the episode B, Side B. Side B of the episode, Side B.
B, Side B.
All right, so as Captain Spike mentioned in the intro, this episode is a B-side to our previous episode where we covered the announcements from the big three during Summer Game Fest festive season. But there were just too many showcases and too many games that trying to discuss them all in one episode would have been just too much, even for us. So today we're going to be talking about the several many showcases featured during the Summer Game Fest 2026. A significant number of those are focused on indie developers from various regions around the world and or from marginalized communities. So those are very important to spotlight, obviously. We will absolutely not be able to discuss every single game here today. There were literally hundreds, but we did want to make sure we buoyed these events, as many of these did not get the coverage that the bigger news stories did. And, you know, part of our stated goal here on Game Buoy is to bring you gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar. In fact, some of these showcases hadn't even been on my radar. They weren't actually even on the Summer Game Fest website in some cases. So, all of that having been done, all of that having been said, let's get into it. You know, we hope that if you are interested in what you hear today, you go check out the showcases, which we'll link over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And better yet, support these games and the developers who make them. So we're going to go ahead and go in chronological order of when the showcases aired, starting with the Mixed Summer Showcase. This aired on June 1st, and I'm going to give a little blurb, mostly in their own words, for each of these showcases. So presented by the Media Indie Exchange, Mixed for short, the Mixed Summer Showcase is, in their own words, a showcase to help raise visibility for developers and publishers from around the world through online and in-person formats, including a Steam event page for games in both the online and on-site showcases. So, Captain Spike, you know, the way we're going to do this for you listener out there is we're just going to spotlight just a couple of games that caught our eye just because there's so much to move through and we are getting long on the tooth. What caught your eye at the Mixed Summer Showcase, Captain Spike?
Yeah, so for me, the big one from the Mix Summer Showcase had actually been Dungeon Lurker. I saw this one get a lot of movement online, too. It's kind of like a dungeon crawler type game, but like with beat-em-up mechanics and like a really, really neat retro aesthetic. I was really into it. And honestly, I was really into a fair number of games across all of these various showcases, but I'm only really going to highlight one or two games from them because Slaggy is also going to highlight a handful of games, and we're just very long in the tooth. If you are interested in the games that we talk about during any of these showcases, as Slaggy noted, I would strongly recommend that you check out the showcases. Anyway, Slaggy, what caught your attention at the Mixed Summer Showcase?
Yeah, there were three I wanted to spotlight from this Mixed Summer Showcase. One was Oh My Doug. It's giving very Earthworm Jim / Ren and Stimpy vibes, except without their problematic creators. You know, a little bit of that early 90s cartoon vibe with a little bit of gross out. It's about being in someone named Doug's body. Another one is Twinkle's Galactic Tour. It was a low-poly musical platformer with a 90s anime aesthetic and sci-fi setting. I would be willing to bet that there was at least some inspiration from Space Channel 5 here. Looks delightful. And then
evening.
Right? I really also enjoyed the preview of Neighborhoods, which is a cozy city sim. And the aesthetic and sense of humor seemed to really take a page from Aardman animations, you know, Wallace and Gromit, etc. So sign me up. That sounds like a delightful time.
Absolutely.
All right. Moving on next, we had on June 2nd, the Black Voices in Gaming Showcase, hosted by the nonprofit organization of the same name. The purpose of the Black Voices in Gaming Showcase is, in their own words, to spotlight games created by Black developers from around the world while continuing Experiences Studios' mission to build sustainable pathways for underrepresented creators. Captain Spike, I would love to hear what caught your eye from the Black Voices in Gaming Showcase.
So, again, there were a lot of games at this showcase that I was like, I'm going to play that. But the game that I have to really highlight for my tastes is Bathory, Heritage of Blood.
Oh, yeah.
It was giving me big GBA era Castlevania vibes. And that for me is like my ideal era of Castlevania game. I've talked about it on the show and online many times. So I'm so hyped for that one. What about you, Slaggy? What had you excited here?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot, as you said, and something that's cool that I want to touch on at the end is that there was a lot of intersectionality across these various, these various showcases. So some of them did show up in multiple showcases, which was cool. The first one I wanted to talk about was Truckoon is Supporting Me from Another World. Like, girl, that title alone already had me sold. It just looks very quirky and fun. Like, who needs Crazy Taxi with its slop when we have Truckoon supporting me from another world? I also really enjoyed the little peek at Alchemic Beasts. It is a pixel art monster taming RPG. Like, do I need to say any more? That is a very specific genre that I do love, as you may know. I think it's always interesting to see new takes on that genre. I really enjoyed seeing two games, both from Sun Studios. One is called Saturday AM Battle Manga. Manga. Are you reading the manga and watching the anime? So Saturday AM Battle Manga. It's a 2.5D fighting game. It seems like there's a lot of Arc System Works inspiration, which we always love. It's apparently a tie-in to a publisher of manga inspired comics. Who are in the game features some of those characters from those works, which is cool. And then there's also Netcode Warriors, which is an anime style arena fighter. So that looked cool. And then last but certainly not least, was Jay and Silent Bob Chronic Blunt Punch. I am generally a fan of the VUSC universe and the world and characters of Kevin Smith. So like having a side scrolling beat 'em up featuring Jay and Silent Bob could probably be the best beat-em-up adaptation, of a cult classic franchise since Scott Pilgrim versus the World of Game. I really just hope they put a Bears driving car joke somewhere in there.
Ah, right. I'm likewise really excited for some of those Sun Studio titles, as well as I was really surprised to see Jay and Silent Bob Chronic Blunt Punch show up in this festival, but likewise, I have a real soft spot for that canon, so I will be checking this out.
Absolutely. That would be a blast to play together, maybe on a certain holiday. So with that, we're going to move on to the Shack News E4 Indie Showcase. This is one of the ones that I had not had on my radar. This aired on June 3rd and presented by Shack News. The E4 Indie Showcase is, in their own words, a yearly culmination of their never-ending support for the indie gaming scene. Through efforts like this and Indielicious, they aim to elevate and celebrate the passion projects of game designers from around the world. Captain Spike, what did you want to highlight from Shack News E4 Indie Showcase?
Yeah. So one of the games that really caught my attention was on your list already, because I had seen this before I put mine together. So I'm going to let you cover Dream Team Supreme. I will highlight Cloudbreaker. I thought this one looked really interesting. It's kind of like a Bullet Heaven type game. However, you also have a lot of, it looks like, customization options that are not randomized. And so that sort of thing is, as I've often noted, really gets my motor going. So I'm really looking forward to that one. What about you, Slaggy?
Yeah, that's just so funny because I was like, oh, Bullet Heaven, that's Captain Spike's alley for sure. So I, as you mentioned, Dream Team Supreme is a deck building robot versus kaiju roguelike. I mean, it's there in the name. It's funny because typically I've never really been into roguelikes, but then when you talk about deck building roguelikes, Balatro kind of was the game changer there for me. So like I'm very tuned into this now, and obviously we love robots versus kaiju. Can they just hug it out at the end though, because I love them both.
And it's worth noting, if you got something out of Balatro, you might end up getting a kick out of Vampire Crawlers.
That's what I was wondering, yeah. On a related note, there's also Gido Gido Kaiju Battle Party, which is a 4v4 kaiju battling game. It seems to have some almost tower defense adjacent mechanics. There's destructible environments. That one looks like it could be really fun, which also looks like it could be great for a party games game party as well. You know, some of these indie games were really the big hits at back at the party games game party. I'm thinking of Nidhogg especially was like a really surprise hit. I was really surprised to see people pick up on that.
Glad you brought that up, but I'll come back to that later.
Yeah, yeah. Car Park Hero is a PvP racing game where you're trying to claim a limited number of parking spots. It just looks very wacky and delightful. I've been, you know, looking for things to fill the void that Rocket Racing has left because, first of all, you know, Epic stops really supporting it, and then I don't play Fortnite anymore. So, you know, it looks a lot of fun, and be checking that out. And then Lethal Wedding. I just have to read the description off Steam because I can't describe it any better. A top-down RPG shooter where the wedding is off and vengeance is on. When criminal clowns kidnap the groom, the bride and mother-in-law must fight through circus freaks and mafia thugs in this gritty 16-bit experience of bullets and blood.
Yeah. I can see why that caught your attention.
Yeah, it just sounds so absurd. Like, and, you know, the 16-bit aesthetic, like, I'm very interested. All right, yeah. So moving on, we had the Latin American Games Showcase. So the Latin American Games Showcase aired on June 4th, and in their own words, it is a platform that strives to increase the visibility of the video games being developed in the LATAM region and Latin Americans in the world. So there were some very cool games shown here. Yeah. I would love to hear what you were tuning into when you tuned into this.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. There was Tempest Vitae, which was a first person game. It had a really interesting art aesthetic. But most interestingly, it let you very directly interact with time as a mechanic, which is a real weakness for me.
Same.
I saw a lot of folks online talking about the creepy vibes of Desktop Explorer, and I also am interested in that. It's kind of giving Doki Doki Literature Club vibes for me.
Yes.
And then I'm also just absolutely loving what I saw out of the pixel work of Artius Pure Imagination. So I'm excited to see how that one turns out, too. What about you?
Yeah, so there were a lot of really cool-looking games here. One of them was Castlebound, an action platformer that has roguelite elements, and almost I would describe it as a Paper Mario inspired aesthetic. I don't want to speak for the artist, but that's what it reminded me of in a positive way. Crosswinds looked really interesting. It's described as a flying adventure game, which is set in the 1930s. It involves trying to find your lover after going your separate ways when a casino heist went south. There's almost like a watercolor cel-shaded sort of art style. I feel like there's probably a non-zero chance that this was inspired by the works of Miyazaki-san, specifically The Wind Rises, which I think is an overlooked classic. Maybe a little bit of Porco Rosso, but also Lupin the Third. Like, I think there's definitely got to be some of that influence there. And then there was also Deep Dish Dungeon. Look, I'm not going to lie, the name alone already piqued my interest because I'm a hungry bitch who loves pizza, but it actually looks really neat. It is a survival exploration game. It has almost a Doom-like first-person 3D point of view with the 2D sprites, you know, that whole sort of aesthetic. There are roguelite elements, and there is crafting, which apparently includes deep dish pizzas that you can craft and eat. So I think we should go to the Deep Dish Dungeon.
Girl, I'm hungry now.
Yeah, I mean, if we were still recording live in the Games Booty Studios, may those studios rest in peace. It's still there. It's just neither of us are there anymore. I was just going to say, you know, getting one of those hot and ready deep dishes. But anyways, that was another time, another place. And maybe we'll get deep dishes some other time, some other place. But we are going to go to the Women-Led Games Showcase, which occurred on June 4th,
And the woman-led games showcase is, in their own words, a yearly showcase platform built to put attention where it already should be, on the women-led and majority women studios making some of the most interesting work in the industry. Yes, you go, girls. What caught your eye?
Well, you're going to touch on this a little bit, but I was surprised to see Soulframe and Warframe pop up at this event. That having been said, I am excited for Soulframe. That's the new game by those folks.
Yeah.
I have a friend that's in like the current, I don't know what stage it's in, if it's an alpha or beta. I'd like to see more of the gameplay of this one though, because they're definitely advertising on aesthetics at this point. And I, you know, like I said, I'd like to see gameplay. I'm also, speaking of aesthetics, low-key obsessed with the aesthetic of Schrodinger's Calls. I thought that was a really interesting looking one. What about you? What was going on for you with this one?
Yeah. So like, speaking of Soulframe and Warframe, I had no idea that Warframe was a woman-led game. I don't think it originally started that way, but apparently a woman named Rebecca Ford is the current director. So I love that. I already love robots and mech suits a lot. That's kind of my thing. One of my things. I have wanted to play this. I kind of feel like after seeing this in the women-led game showcase and knowing that it's, you know, a woman-led game, should probably get around to checking this out. Another Absolutely. One, which is one that I think you would also enjoy for reasons, multiple reasons, is called Dungeons and Daddies BDSM. Like, I know what you're going to say, but it's actually a Bullet Heaven, similar to what you were saying with that other game. And it involves daddies getting sucked into a dimension where they have to fight off monsters, because BDSM, despite what you might think, means bad dads survive monsters. So, you know, like, bullet hell games are normally not my thing, but it looks like a riot. It has a great sense of humor from what I can tell, and that can go a long way. Also, I wanted to spotlight Arcane Eats, which is a roguelike deck builder with a cooking game twist. I think that's a really interesting twist on that. I just wanted to point out that they showed Barbie Horse Ride and Rescue. Like, I don't think this is actually on my radar, although I did pre-order the deluxe edition of that Barbie collection that's coming out. I just kind of feel like there was a little bit of self-awareness here putting a Barbie game, specifically a Barbie horse game, just because, you know, that's such a stereotypically girl-coded game, so to speak. So I feel like there's probably a little bit of self-awareness and kind of like, yeah, we're going to own this. Yeah, hell yeah, Barbie horse games. Shout out to the horse girls, right? Darkbound, survival horror is usually not my thing, but Darkbound is a game involving a cute, low-poly kitty cat trying to escape a hospital. It looks so charming that it might be worth risking the jump scares. And then there's also Lucky Punk, which is a roguelike deck builder, notice the trend. This one's in a post-apocalyptic setting. I really love the art style. So yeah, there was actually a lot from this one. You know, I tried to keep it to about three or four per showcase, but this one, there was a lot that jumped out to me. So really enjoyed it.
I love that, though.
All right. Moving on. I feel like we're going at a pretty good clip here, so going to keep it
moving.
We
really are. I'm very pleased.
On June 5th, we had the Accessibility Summer Showcase.
Snap out of it, Charlie.
Snap out of it. Right. So the Accessibility Summer Showcase, which I believe was, it was hosted by Laura K. Buzz, who you may know. Laura K. Dale, right? Yeah. So I wanted to double check because it's been a while since I made my notes for this. So Laura is obviously a known fixture in the gaming community, at least for me. And so the Accessibility Summer Showcase is, in their own words, the only video game trailer showcase fully dedicated to highlighting trailers for games that have made an effort to be accessible to a wide range of disabled players. So I would love to hear about what you thought about some of these games.
Yeah, I thought this was a really awesome event. I think it's really cool that they did this. In terms of specific games, you're actually going to talk about the ones that I was excited to play. So instead, I want to highlight one that they showed. It's called An Unplayable Game. And I think this concept is so neat, right? It's basically using the format of a game, but, you know, without giving you the abilities to actually pass the obstacles it's putting in front of you in order to sort of show the challenges of what a lack of accessibility options is really like experientially. It's sort of giving me Depression Quest vibes, and I mean that as like the highest form of compliment in terms of like really being almost like an empathy engine for people who are having an experience different than your own.
100%. I see that. Yeah. Some of these I definitely thought would be on your radar as well. So,
well, yeah, like stuff like Trading Card Inspector sounds hella good, but right? Get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had to link that to our group chat because I was like, oh yeah, this is totally for y'all. So Trading Card Inspector is a job sim where you have to inspect if trading cards are real or counterfeit. The cool thing is that it has a high contrast art style and has over 40 color options for accessibility. So, like, love that. That's, you know, a lot of the things I saw were theme is visual accessibility, which was really cool. That's not the only thing, but you know, it was kind of a theme that I saw that was really cool. That kind of I hadn't really considered as someone who, you know, does not require those color options or color accessibility tools. Similarly, there's Colorbound, which is a palette platformer, in the words of the developers. The story is inspired by South American culture, which is very cool. The puzzles are color-based, and because it's color-based, they have three alternate color schemes for those with color blindness so that you can enjoy this game and this unique mechanic, regardless of the way that your eyes perceive color. So I think that's just great, and a way to not sacrifice your artistic vision while making it accessible to all. Celsius Strays is a spinoff of Brock the Investigator, which I know a lot of folks really enjoyed. I have not personally gotten around to that one, but I know that that one also had added some accessibility options for blind players. So Celsius Strays is a puzzle light visual novel with some badass mice who kind of almost give me biker mice from Mars vibes, but they're not on Mars. And there's probably not Snickers product placement either. Although we do need to remember that winners do need something to satisfy their hunger. In all seriousness, another one that I thought was really neat was Jig Rift. This is a 3D puzzle platformer where you're a frog that's exploring an island that's was split into jigsaw puzzle shaped pieces. There are lots of accessibility options that they highlighted, and they also mentioned something that I don't know if is really traditionally accessibility the way we would think of it in terms of, like, you know, reducing barriers for access, but they talked about how you could play the game at your own pace. So, like, there's not really punishing quick time events, things like that. I recognize that fact means that that might not be a game for everyone, but I think that that's a great way to think about, you know, accessibility minded design.
Yeah, I think that's a very positive thing
in terms of, like, you know, for some people, like, it could even be like, you know, some people may get really anxious with quick time events, you know? So, like, I think there's a lot of ways to think about accessibility that, you know, maybe a lot of developers don't think about. So this was another one that I do not believe was on the website for the Summer Game Fest. So I was glad that it came across my radar.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. This was one where an unplayable game, Jig Rift, you know, some of these games actually, and the way they were talking about them really did make me feel like, man, I wish more developers would take these kinds of approaches and think about, in, you know, how these things actually impact gamers, because the accessibility conversation is actually a lot more complicated than difficulty sliders, the way that it often gets flattened down. And, it, you know, I think there's a lot of really nuanced ways that you can approach these things to make your games more accessible to a wider variety of people without watering down the experience or whatever for people who like it.
Yeah,
you know, just requires different approaches and different thoughts. And I think that the perspectives we saw on display at this event were really valuable. That to me is the thing that this to me was a really valuable event. So, like you said, I'm glad it got buoyed onto our radar.
Yeah, and I mean, we had a buddy that we played World of Warcraft with, who is, you know, another Valk Network supporter as well. and hopefully still tunes into the show as well. And I remember, you know, he would really talk about the challenges of that a lot of games were not accessible for blind players or visually impaired players. So it's great to see, although I'm sure there's still so much more work to be done, to see that this was spotlighted. And that's probably a little more than I will say about the other showcases. I got off on a little tangent there, but I think it's important. And I'll be wrapping up about all the showcases as we, and why it's so important that all these different showcases were talked about. So moving on, we have Day of the Devs. This was on June 5th, and it was presented by the nonprofit of the same name that was established by now independent Double Fine. Yay, so happy for them. And I am 8-Bit. The goal of the Day of the Devs showcase is, in their own words, to highlight, spelled high-light, not just the games, but also the people who made them. And inclusion in their showcases is free. They never charge developers to be part of their showcases. And so I would love to hear some of your highlights. I was just tickled about the way they spelled highlights.
The thing for me here, and this is why I was glad that you brought up that talking point you did earlier. I saw the game Blood Dungeon. Its aesthetic, I was already like, okay. And then it got to like, from the developers of Nidhogg. And I was like, oh shit. So I'm super excited for that one. I'm also excited for N plus Infinity times 2, but less in that active excitement way like I am for Blood Dungeon, and more in that, like, I'll definitely get to that at some point, like maybe on sale or whatever, but I'll play it for sure. And again, all of these picks are made with the awareness of what you're picking, and that, you know, the games you're picking, many of them are games I'm also quite excited for, including this first one you're going to go on.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad that I am tuned into the Game Buoy sort of perspective here then. So the first one was Super Ukulele Kart, which basically is Super Mario Kart for SNES, but with ukulele characters. I mean, I say Super Mario Kart for SNES because it absolutely has a very intentional Mode 7 vibe. Something that looks really fun and wacky is that there are lots of ways that you'll be able to customize the race to add chaos. So, like, different things that you can enable or disable to kind of throw a wrench into things. So I think that's a really fun spin that's sure to be a wild time. Another one that was really interesting to me was 33 Immortals. This is a 33-player co-op roguelike where you have to attack and dethrone God. Like, literally, that's what it's about. I love the idea of a co-op roguelike, especially with 33 players. Like, you know, you think of, like, Tetris 99, Super Mario Brothers 35, things like that, where so many of these large-scale games are meant to be more of, like, a battle royale, really. The fact that it's a co-op game, I just think that's really neat. So something I thought was cool. Mr. Records is a part-time record store job sim, part rhythm platformer. So, like, you know, obviously both of those on their own are delightful. So it just really looks like it would be really cool. The last one I wanted to spotlight was Lazy River. So this is a co-op FPS, which maybe might surprise you if you know my taste, that that's usually not the thing, but I have to read the description on this one because you'll see exactly why. A co-op adventure at the galaxy's most unregulated water park. Some guy peed in the pool, and the pee mixed with the space water and turned everybody into zombies except you and your friends. Build a raft, ride down the Lazy River, and escape before you run out of hot dogs.
I laughed so hard at that that I woke my dog up.
Oh, but it was worth it.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, again, all of these games you're talking about, like, how could that not also appeal to me?
Oh, no, I knew that one for sure would. I think we're going to have to fight the pee water space zombies.
Yes.
All right, moving it along. We had the Southeast Asian Games Showcase on June 6th. The purpose of the Southeast Asian Games Showcase is, in their own words, to celebrate Southeast Asian game developers and check out the latest and greatest games from Southeast Asian-based or Southeast Asian-led teams. Captain Spike, go ahead and start us out.
Yeah, so I'm really loving the like music aesthetic vibes of No Straight Roads 2. So that's definitely one that I'll be keeping my eyes on. A Nightmare Circus was giving me 3D platformer action fun vibes, which is obviously something I'm super into. And then I think you're going to talk about this too, but TCG Card Shop Simulator, I was already kind of looking at that because I've seen people talk about these kinds of games online. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a riot. Like, I'd get into that. What about you?
Yeah, yeah. So TCG Card Shop Simulator is different from Trading Card Inspector, but it basically does what it says on the tin and piqued my interest. And I linked that one. Can you tell that I'm friends with TCG fans? I also really thought Cable City was interesting. A low poly 3D platformer where you're either a little cat or foxy type of thing. You're kind of like riding power cables throughout a sky city to kind of fix the Cable City. Okay, this next one, don't judge it based on the title. I know what you're going to think. It's called Growing My Manhole.
Yeah.
But it's about trying to get a manhole so big that it consumes the universe. And no, not that type of manhole.
6 inches.
Talk about 6 light years. Got to think bigger. Gotta grow your manhole bigger.
Like a Katamari vibe.
Yeah, yeah, like a Nobi Nobi boy.
Ah, all right. Take that manhole to Mars.
Come on, Teletubby. Teleport our manhole to Mars. Last, I would like to talk about Building Relationships, which is a cozy adventure game where you're playing as a house and you can date other houses. But you don't have to date other houses because you can also just go fishing instead, and the fish are cars because of course they are.
Yeah, no, that's, again, all of these games. In fact, frankly, it's one of those things where I was watching all of these showcases and the majority of games I saw seemed to have something that I was like, oh, I'd be interested in checking that out. And I guess that's kind of the joy of like something like Steam, where, you know, most of these games will probably be available at an affordable price. If not today, then, you know, at some point. So I'm excited. I'm literally excited about all of the games we've talked about so far and more. That's the crazy part, is we literally don't have time to talk about all the cool shit at all these things.
Yeah, yeah. So moving on, we have Wholesome Direct, which aired on June 6th. And the purpose of Wholesome Direct is, in their own words, to highlight the latest up-and-coming titles for players looking for uplifting, joyful, and hopeful games. What was uplifting, joyful, and hopeful for you?
Paralives definitely caught my eye, yes. Just in terms of, like, I know it's going to be big. And in fact, you know, I saw it on June 6th, and I have already since then seen people streaming the early access version. So, like, people definitely are excited about Paralives. Likewise for Moonlight Peaks, which I literally saw someone go through like character creation process on like 2 nights ago. It looks really cute though, to its credit. Like, I got kind of interested in it. And to be honest, like, that's kind of a big surprise because frankly, most of these games are just a little less my speed. That's no offense to Wholesome Direct. Like, I'm pretty open about the fact that like, I tend to like big aggro games. And that's not what Wholesome Direct is about.
Well, I mean, you wanted to marry Duke after all. You're a little aggro.
So the thing is, that having been said, Go-Go Town did catch my attention a bit. And that's no pun intended in terms of my complaints about the speed of these types of events. But it was giving me Animal Crossing vibes, except with things moving in like a much more like fast-paced fashion and like kind of an over-the-top style. And as noted, I ended up having a real love affair with Animal Crossing over the last year. So I'd definitely be interested in seeing another take on that type of game. What about you?
Yeah, I thought that Dragon Shelter looked very cute. It's a fantasy farming sim, which is very cute. I mean, I love dragons, so I mean, win there. One that I thought was really cute was Little Cheeseworks, which is a co-op game where you have to play as cute little mice
trying to carry cheese and at the same time avoid waking up a cat. It's very like Don't Wake Daddy meets Mousetrap, but also a video game. 90s Borgade kids, you know what I'm talking about. I also thought that Fields of Mystria was interesting. I mean, it's basically Stardew Valley, but make it anime. So, I mean, I guess it's basically Story of Seasons, but, you know, I think it's always great to see other, especially independent voices in that franchise, or that genre, rather. And then Spirit Crossing is one that I had already kind of had it on my radar. It's basically a cozy life sim MMO, so kind of similar to Palia, I would think, based on what I've seen. But it's set in a land where the human and spirit worlds meet. So, you know, you get a little bit of that Miyazaki, a little bit of that Avatar, you know, spirit world sort of vibe. And just looked very, very poignant in a way. So with that, we're going to move on to the story-rich showcase. We are just about halfway through the showcases. There were a lot. So thank you for sticking with us. We just wanted to make sure that we did highlight all of these showcases, because, like, literally, there was just so much to talk about. Story-rich showcase aired on June 6th, and in their own words, is a brand new video showcase dedicated entirely to story-rich indie games. Why don't you start us out?
Okay. There were a few titles here I was interested in, but for the most part, this presentation focus just isn't my thing, even for games I do like. So I guess that's my way of saying that this wasn't my favorite showcase. Some games like Demon School and Citizen Sleeper, I felt like they didn't really highlight the things about those games that I really love. That having been said, Janet de Mornay is a slumlord and a witch. Certainly seems very funny. Like, I will almost certainly check that out. But as noted, this presentation wasn't quite my thing. And for a lot of these were games that I've already seen, as noted. In some cases, I've already played through. What about you, Slaggy?
Yeah, you know, that's what I will say. And I do know that this is a newer showcase, so hopefully it will grow in the future. But a lot of these games were not new. And so, like, you know, maybe they were getting released on a new platform or, you know, things like that. But that's great that they got showcased. But I specifically wanted to buoy some of the games that are not out yet. One that I thought you might actually be into as well is Grave Seasons, which is a farming sim, but make it murder mystery.
Yeah.
Like farming sim in Silent Hill. Apple Crumbles seemed very silly. It's a creepy, cozy mystery in which most assuredly nobody's trying to kill grandma on her 84th birthday. Because why would you do that? And I also really was interested in The Hearth and Harbor. It's a restaurant management RPG, but make it Victorian. And there's a storm brewing, so there may be more to it than meets the eye of the storm.
No, I mean, this is, again, one of those situations where I expect to play a lot of these games, given over enough span of time, right?
Absolutely. Moving on, we have the Green Games Showcase, which aired on June 6th. The purpose of the Green Games Showcase is, in their own words, showcasing games that reconnect us with nature, spark hope for the future, and remind us what's worth protecting. And what's worth protecting for you?
I think this was a really, 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 really cool idea for a showcase. Highlighting games like this, I think, is very cool. I think that's a very good purpose. Gameplay-wise, since most of these were just aesthetically about, you know, nature and what have you, gameplay-wise, I think Witch Spire was the one that seemed most up my creek. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of cozy games here, and I was feeling a little over-cozied at this point.
Especially after the Wholesome Direct, huh?
Well, yeah, because a lot of these I watched while they were happening on my second screen, and so it was like, wow, okay, another... Well,
so cozy. I mean, we need a little coziness in these times, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, though. That's the real tea.
Yeah, I thought anyway. I thought that Witch Spire being a survival RPG, but make it witches, was a very interesting twist, and I figured you would like that one, too. I really felt drawn to Solarpunk, which is a cozy survival game where you use an airship to go to different floating islands. And then Possum Resort is Stardew Valley, but make it an animal sanctuary.
Aww.
Right? And now, for one near and dear to our dear little gay hearts, is the Gaming Pride Parade. And that's spelled G-A-Y because it's what? Gay! So this aired on June 6th, and the purpose of the Gaming Pride Parade is, in their own words, celebrating queer creativity, queer developers, and the incredible games helping push this industry forward. The showcase was presented in partnership with the Gaming Foundation, which is an organization dedicated to uplifting LGBTQIA+ people all across gaming through mentorship, community programs, advocacy, and support of queer creators. Amazing. Obviously something that's very, very near to us. We've had multiple episodes about queer issues and queer games and queer culture in gaming and all of that. So I would love to hear what was queer in here and dear for you.
Okay, so with the understanding that there were multiple games that I would have picked if you hadn't already picked them and written notes about them by the time that I saw this document.
Sorry about it.
My pick then goes to Riz Dungeon, Skeleton Key to My Heart, which was, I think they had described it as like a dungeon crawler RPG and love sim. So I'm like, or dating sim, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm super here for that. And it has like a cute retro aesthetic, which I keep saying cute retro aesthetic, but the reality is a good pixel art aesthetic for me will always capture my attention. Like
chef's kiss, yes.
Yeah, right? Like good art always catches my attention. It is what it is. That having been said, I had felt that this presentation was a little thin, and I also felt that you had noted that, so take it away.
Yeah, in some ways it made it a little easier to focus in on which ones to talk about, because there were a lot less games. I think there were maybe like in the 12 to 16 games range, just off the top of my head, whereas some of these literally had 50, 60, 70, 80 games, which like in some ways that was like, and I'll touch on that a little at the end about just the sheer volume of games. So I really thought that Wild Society was looked interesting. It's a witchy period drama sim, as described by the developers, where you run a magical boarding house. One that I thought might appeal to you in particular was Tako no Himitsu, Ocean of Secrets. It's a love letter to GBA era JRPGs. You can definitely see it in the aesthetic there. You have a party of characters and their octopus companions, and you are traveling the world to find out why animals are going missing. And then I also really enjoyed the preview of Neon Death Drop, which is a top-down puzzle action RPG. You play as a gay go-go boy in a futuristic sky city that's filled with glitchy robots, and you have to slay them with your fierce dance moves. Yes, mama.
Okay, but that was actually the one that I was like really excited by, because the gameplay looked really fun too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like for some of these games, it was more about aesthetics, but that one I was like, oh, that looks fun.
So fun, so fierce, so slay the house doubts. Boots, mama, yes. Slay those glitchy robots. All right, moving on. Oh, we are getting so long in the tooth, and we have to wrap up the show with our usual wrap-ups as well. So, Frosty Games Fest aired on June 6th, but in the time zone it was broadcast in was on June 7th. The Frosty Games Fest is, in their own words, a showcase for world premiere announcements and updates from 50-plus of the coolest games made in Australia and Aotearoa, New Zealand. Take it away, Captain Spike.
Okay, I'm really fascinated by Verbal Void. They're literally gamifying neurodivergence. I'm fascinated by it. Let's see, and the other one was another adorable-looking, fast-paced 3D platformer. This one, I think, was called Bashful Adoration. Just some really cute games here and like some really interesting ideas. I ended up liking this stream, which was good because when I saw the name of it, I was not really sure what to expect. But turned out New Zealand rad as hell. What about you? What you got?
Yeah, yeah. So Cozy Games Restoration does what it says on the tin. Looks like very, very appealing to a certain type of person, the ones who are recording the show, I think. I thought Penguin Colony was an interesting game. It's literally, I'm like, not just like basically an H.P. Lovecraft story. It's literally a retelling of an H.P. Lovecraft story, but it's told from the point of view of penguins in Antarctica. You know, Lovecraft was problematic, but, you know, we do love cosmic horror, generally speaking, and we love penguins. One last one that I really wanted to point out was Stain and Swing. So it's literally a puzzle game where you're bee playing golf. But also kind of gave me a little bit of, remember like the mobile game Cat Physics? I feel like there was like a little bit of that sort of thing where you had to, you know, like, because with Stain and Swing, you kind of have to like think about the angles that your bee is stinging the golf ball and stuff. So like,
that's awesome though.
Yeah. It kind of gave me that sort of vibe. Like, I don't necessarily know that it would be described as a physics puzzler, but it kind of gave me that sort of vibe. And the you know, I've enjoyed those in the past.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the PC Gaming Show, which aired on June 7th, presented by PC Gamer. The purpose of the PC Gaming Show is, in their own words, to feature exclusive trailers, new game announcements, and developer interviews from around the world.
Yeah, this was it always is a show that exists. This year, watched it. I had a good time with it. I will say I had a better time with it this year than I did last year, which is the important thing to note. That having been said, kind of like what we had been saying about the one earlier, most of what was shown here, I kind of feel like I had already seen elsewhere. That having been said, because I do want to pick a game to highlight, I was really interested in what I saw here of Into the Wind, which again was one that kind of had like the Ghibli Miyazaki type vibes.
Yes.
What about you? I see in your notes here, you were making a talking point here that I am inclined to agree with.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to mention that, as we've kind of talked about in the past couple episodes, I'm primarily a PC gamer now because of the decisions that Sony and Microsoft have been continuing to make. So normally PC Gaming Show is one that obviously I would watch, but maybe not really put too much stock into, because I'm like, well, I don't really play games on the computer anymore. I'm glad to see that there is a bounty of games. Like, it made me really feel like I made the right call. To be fair, some of the games here will be featured on consoles. But, you know, I'm returning to the PC gaming space, and so that was good to be able to start taking note of some of these games. I did want to mention that Beasts of Reincarnation was featured. That's the Game Freak game that's coming up. It does look like it's come a really long way. I did have some initial concerns about how it might perform based on early footage, but it looks great. Valheim is one that, you know, it's been in development for a very long time, possibly back in the classic Bowie era. It might have even been back then. Anyways, it looks great. This is a survival sandbox game where you're playing as fallen Vikings. Definitely a vibe. I wanted to spotlight Vampire the Masquerade Eternal Whispers. You know, I think we both talked about the fact that we are fans of the World of Darkness series of TTRPGs. And we also talked about that Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 had like that content locked behind a paywall. And so that was a little bit so controversial. So Eternal Whispers is going to be a CRPG game, very much like kind of playing into that Baldur's Gate sort of vibe. Since, you know, I feel like after Baldur's Gate 3, people like really kind of went for that, complete with dice rolls and everything. So, you know, I have not yet played Baldur's Gate 3, but knowing that this is in the World of Darkness and has dice rolls, which I love, that's absolutely up my alley. Also, side note to anybody out there, I would still really like to play a Vampire the Masquerade game. I have a bisexual goth vampire who got sired by a vampire mob boss character concept. And also, Sulkler, because I know you're listening, I had this idea way before Basil Pendergast was even a twinkle in your eye. I promise I'm not just trying to rip him off there. Sulkler, and you will know what I mean there. Also, I wanted to...
While we're on that point, I just have to note, you have to play Esoteric Ebb. I've been playing it a lot this week. I'll talk about it more toward the end of the show. However, I just wanted to note to you, it is very much the dice rolly CRPG type of experience. And in fact, the thing I like about Esoteric Ebb so much is that it basically doesn't have a combat system. Like there is a little combat system, but it's extremely not a focus. Like across the many hours I've put in, I've only ever had like two combats because everything is really more just like a CRPG, but only the dialogue interactions. And to me, the dialogue interactions are the best part. So I'm having such a blast with it.
Similar to how I felt about
Disco Elysium, but the setting and aesthetic and tone are just very in line with my vibes.
Hell yeah. No, I actually bought that and I've been meaning to get to it. And I also wonder if Eternal Whispers will be more of that, because I know like with Vampire the Masquerade, so much of that is the social gameplay of it, right? So
yeah, honestly, I mean, if they're doing it right, yeah.
Yeah, so someone run a vampire game for me, please. Or maybe I'll just have to run one. I also wanted to shout out Shroom and Gloom. Obviously, like, the title alone was, like, a good silly title will draw me in. But, like, this is a roguelike deck builder, first-person fungal dungeon crawler. The vibe looks really cool. When the genre description is just that weird, I'm like, okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, no, for real.
Revamp is a game where you play as Dracula in a castle defense roguelite. And then Cassette Beats 2002 is the sequel to Cassette Beats, which is the monster catching game with the cassette player mechanic. I did never get around to the first one, but this put it back on my radar. So might have to check that out. And then 2002, I almost want to say 2022. I'd rather go back to 2002, except I hadn't met you yet, so like a 2002 where I knew you. So anyways, rather than reminisce on the past, we will move forward into the future and talk about the Deutsche Indie Showcase, which aired on June 7th. The Deutsche Indie Showcase is, in their own words, a showcase featuring more than 30 indie games developed in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. What stood out to you, Captain Spike?
Okay, I know this is really more of a you thing, but Aqua Park Tycoon, honestly, I was like, yes, this... The thing is, anytime in like Theme Park or Roller Coaster Tycoon, when you get the option to make like the water tube tracks, I always have so much fun making those. And so I'm like, for me, a whole game that's just those attractions, this is extremely my fucking jam.
Yes. And I believe they did add, as Planet Coaster 2, as one of the features, there's water parks too. So,
That's cute to know.
Yeah.
What about you though? What caught your imagination or attention?
The first one was Tiny Train Adventures. You know, it's tiny, it's trainy, it's all a little zany, in all seriousness. It is not related to Tiny Toon Adventures, but it is a cozy exploration game where you're building little railways and driving trains through a mountainous region. So it's kind of like very much Model Trains, the game. Little Sheep Valley is a farm sim set in the Mediterranean, and it has sheep, and you can pet the sheep, and the sheep are cute.
Ah!
And then last, I wanted to point out Pesky Orcs. You know, despite the fact that as an orc lover, I do find the very concept of this game somewhat orcophobic. It is a pixel art auto battler RTS, which is a orcs versus humans roguelike. I would say that's a 10 out of 10 idea if you let me play as an orc, but to be serious, it looks like a delight. All right, and wrapping it up here, we are just about at the end of the showcases. So last but not least, we have the India Games Showcase, which aired on June 8th. And is, in their own words, a digital event and an initiative by Nodding Head Games and Nodwin Gaming that aims to showcase new or upcoming indie games from India.
The one that really caught my attention from this showcase was Mechanical Fury. It was like a sci-fi first-person-y game. It was almost giving me, in terms of its movement, it was almost giving me like Mirror's Edge, although the action seemed quite different from that, and the aesthetics were like really bright and like cel-shaded. Definitely has my attention. I'm curious about how it's going to shape out, and we'll be keeping an eye on it. It's already on my wish list on Steam. In fact, that's kind of something else I've gotten into during this particular season, has been like adding all of these games to my wish list, and now I'll be looking for when they go on sale and when they're
That's a great idea.
Yeah, so I'm actually really excited about this whole like really doubling down on Steam, and yeah, I'm excited. I should say doubling down on PC gaming generally. Anyway, sure. What about yourself to wrap this out?
So you talked about Mechanical Fury, and I'll talk about a game that has mechanical invaders and furries, because this is called Project Fox. There was a game that just came out with a fox in a sci-fi setting, but if you want more of that, this is a hack-and-shoot game where a sci-fi fox is fighting off some mechanical invaders, and there is aerial combat, so definitely very much in the moment. Silk Grove is an open world game which is set in a post-apocalyptic environment following a war between humans and machines. In this game, you will be upgrading and managing a mobile home while traveling between communities to restore them. And last but not least, there was Bao Bao's Cozy Cleaning Service. It's basically Power Wash Simulator, but make it 2D and featuring a panda and lo-fi beats. Specifically, I tried playing Power Wash Simulator, and something about it almost gave me like a little bit of motion sickness. So I think that Bao Bao's Cozy Cleaning Services will definitely be more of my vibe while scratching that itch.
Oh, yeah.
So something that I wanted to do really quickly, and I will need you to double up with me here, because I don't know when the last time you've watched any Drag Race adjacent content is, but remember on Raja and Raven's fashion photo review, they would go trend alert. So I need you at the count of three. We're going to say trend alert. 1, 2, 3.
Trend alert.
You can edit that to make it work.
I mean, on my side, it already sounded good, so I don't think it'll take much.
Okay. And it would be funny if you just left this all in to make it meta. So
I probably will.
The first one is roguelikes. Also, roguelike deck builders.
Farming sims.
Job simulators. Survival games.
Genre mashups.
Ooh, we love it. And several mini games. Appearing in several many showcases. Yes, intersectionality, we love it. I mean, I'm being a little sassy here, but no, we really do. And with that, we are very much long in the tooth. We're gonna try to get this episode in under 3 hours if we can. So Captain Spock, I'm just writing some fanfic now. Captain Spike, who is not a Vulcan, can you share your final thoughts? We are long on the tooth. I'm lucky that I can even form words at this point. What did you think of the other showcases from the Summer Game Fest?
This was a really exciting year. I do believe you'll speak a bit more to how overwhelmed we were by the staggering amount of games. But I really do need to note, I think it's really awesome that there were so many diverse voices uplifted across these varied showcases. We talked kind of last episode about how Summer Game Fest compares to the old E3s. And to me, especially if we include all of these smaller showcases, it far surpasses what E3 ever was. We're having so much wider and so much deeper content and variety. The variety and content is lacking in the big AAA space. Sean Layden, formerly of PlayStation, isn't wrong about that. But in these smaller showcases, there really was so much imagination and so much excitement, and even a lot of like taking old ideas and making them new again. And I think we're at another kind of inflection point where the AAA industry needs to take a step, hit the reset button. And not entirely dissimilar to like what Xbox is saying, just not like that. Those are my final thoughts, is that I think the larger industry could really learn from some of these smaller showcases.
Absolutely.
Are your thoughts?
Yeah, no. What you said about that, we were overwhelmed by the staggering amount of games, like literally staggeringly overwhelming is how I describe the number of games. Like, honestly, like, it ended up being a little bit of a mixed blessing. Obviously, I didn't want you to have dental woes, but
reviewing all of the showcases to make notes and kind of pick out my highlights was really a challenge for my executive functioning, let me tell you, honey. You know, I also talked a little bit last time about my larger concerns about the Game Awards as an organization, but I'm very pleased that there were so many showcases that focused on games from around the world and or marginalized communities. You know, obviously, recording here where we do in America, we live in a time where our government is enacting policies that impact the ability to, shall we say, make sure that a diverse group of people are treated in equitable and inclusive ways, wink, wink. And, you know, that's not even to mention the fact that people of color, women, the LGBTQIA plus community are faced with threats to our very livelihoods, all in the name of performative patriotism and turning our country into a white ethnostate. Obviously, I want to particularly emphasize the horrors that Black folks, Latinx folks, folks from the Middle East, trans folks in particular, that they have to deal with. I think they are getting the worst of it here. That all being said, for what you described as the modern equivalent of E3 to be giving so much of a spotlight to a diverse community of game developers, I think that's to be applauded. You know, even if for me, my mind honestly had difficulty processing that number of games, that's a me thing probably. I think having a wide variety of choices is good for gaming. And like you were touching on this, everything going on with Sony and Microsoft in particular, I really could see all of that kind of imploding of the AAA industry having a knock-on effect of indie gaming really being where a lot of folks are turning to, and a lot of these indie developers and a lot of these creative ideas being able to shine, because more and more people, ourselves included, I think, are being more and more disillusioned with the AAA industry at large. So as you said, yeah, I think that E3 in particular was kind of a, as much as we loved it, it was corporate gaming industry. It was very AAA focused. It was all the big. And
well, yeah, I mean, in some ways, it was in some years literally like a party for the fucking various electronics companies, not even all game devs after a point, just to go and like have booth babes, hookers, and blow. Like, honestly, what we have now is so much better, even if the Keeley big event part isn't quite in play. I think it's getting better every year, and this year I felt like what we got this year was better. And like I said, I think that what we got from the extended showcases should be instructive to the industry at large, like you say.
Absolutely.
Anyway,
and speaking of someone who was disillusioned with an industry, let's pay homage to the brilliant Linda Perry and talk about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
I like what you did there, but I have to be honest, I did consider singing a Pink song for a minute. You know, because they're such frequent writing collaborators. Anyway, I want to start us off here, talk about Final Fantasy XIV, which I played on PC. I did label on my notes what platforms I played everything on. I'm probably going to mention that as well. But I'm noting this is really for more personal uses because of the way my brain works and how I quantify data. After I've been doing this PC focus for maybe 6 months, I want to really see like how my gameplay distribution, what it really looks like. And part of that involves collecting this data.
Yes, data points, come on.
Right. Anyway, last time I spoke here, I had three more jobs to level. I had something like 50 levels to go among those three jobs. TBH, next time we record, that number is going to be even lower, if at all, because I now have 10 levels across the two jobs to do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I have two jobs. They're just both at 95 now. So I'm so close. Otherwise, beyond that, I've just been kind of, you know, doing my dailies, working on getting my various resources built up, trying to grind out those stupid effing crystal pastes. They were off their freaking knobs when they just came up with the numbers that we have to collect for those. Every tier should be like half the number it is currently. What about you, Slaggy? What have you been playing?
Yeah, so I'm just going to start out by saying that you have had a much more diverse gaming experience over the past couple weeks, so I will, moving forward, just kind of pop in where I also was part of those experiences. But I have also been playing Final Fantasy XIV. I've kind of been no-lifing it lately, which is good because it's my gaming comfort food. I also recognize
that I was just going to say, girl, I never see you online. But then I realized you're on your alt, bitch.
Well, but then there's also times where you're AFK when I'm online. So, you know, it's just timing.
It's true. I do. It's true. I am AFK from like 8 p.m. on often. And it's like, that's prime time for many people.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, I've talked about how 14 is kind of my gaming comfort food. I recognize that I haven't been playing a lot lately, but it's my life, Dad. I'm going to do what I want. But, you know, to be serious for a moment, I think in the past I used to guilt myself for not playing more games, and I thought that I was doing a disservice for our show. But I'm slightly wiser and much older now, and I don't think that's a healthy way to look at a hobby that should be fun. So I did want to shout out that, you know, unfortunately, it does seem like the times that I am on my main character is when you're AFK. So the times that we are able to cross paths, I'm like, oh, yay, let's do stuff. And we've been able to play someone from one of our tabletop gaming groups, which is really fun to play with them. And so as far as my main character goes, he's just been doing kind of the regular activities. We are at that point where there's a bit of a lull between patches. So, you know, I've been mostly doing treasure maps and front lines, which is the PvP. But as you said, the crystal paste is the mechanic of grinding to it's just running like dungeons and content and stuff for the relic weapons, which are like the super fancy weapons. So knowing that the final step is coming in the upcoming patch 7.55, which is just over a week from the time this episode goes up, I'm kind of like, ooh, I've kind of been slacking. It's a little bit of fire under my ass.
Yeah.
You know, I'm also looking forward to the addition to Occult Crescent, which is the large-scale field operations. I had a lot of fun doing that with you guys. So, yeah.
Occult Crescent stuff does give the stupid crystal pastes, so doing that content might be one way that we finally get over that hump.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely down to try to grind that out. I just, time kind of got away from me. But as you mentioned, I have been spending time on an alt, especially on during the hours where I know that is not prime gaming time for you. So
yeah, well, you know, we are in a phase in our lives where we have caretaker responsibilities for someone, and so yeah, we have to, yeah, you know, we, real life comes first basically, but we do what we can.
Yeah, so I did mention last time I started a Rogadin alt, playing with some of my friendly friends that I do treasure maps with, and there's eventually going to be some like role playing, like they're really into like RP, which is something I've never done in an MMO space, so it's been kind of cool to like come up with like a backstory for my character and stuff. But as far as the actual game goes, I've finished all of A Realm Reborn at this point, including the patch content. I'm currently early-ish in Heavensward, but I've also kind of for the past week been just grinding out the gathering jobs and doing ocean fishing, just really kind of cozy gaming it.
I love ocean fishing.
Me too. Like, I am in content in the story that's like level 51, 52. My fisher is like level 64, like to the point where I won't be able to even do all of the fishing quests because I'm so out leveled. Yeah, so like that's kind of been where my vibe's at. Just kind of like, because I find gathering in this game very calming, very opposite of crafting, which is very stressful for me. But as far as the main game goes, it's just really been a neat way, you know, to kind of do a new game plus, basically, which I could have just done new game plus, but you know, it's been a fun way to do it in a different way. But really looking at the larger narrative of the Heidelin Zodiac arc, try saying that three times fast, with the context of everything we know now about how that all resolves, it's like, oh damn, they had a master plan very early on, and like especially when you hit patch 2.4 and meet Lady Iceheart and Shiva, and it starts all going down, setting up for Heavensward. Like, it really is so damn good. And, like, you know, a lot of people point to Shadowbringers and Endwalker as the hallmarks of the game's more recent years. So, honestly, the game's always kind of been that bitch, honestly. Like, A Realm Reborn was good, and, you know, it's really set up so much. But looking at retrospective perspectives, they really, like, stepped their game up fast and kind of gone full throttle since then. And I think they're still doing great, even though most people don't like Dawn Trail. So, yeah, I want to let you wrap up with the games you've been playing. I will briefly chime in with some things that I have also partaked when I have overlap. So take it away.
Yeah, let's see. I mentioned I've been playing Esoteric Ebb. Basically, what happened is that there was a Steam sale going, and I was on this whole vibe of like, well, I guess if I'm going to be playing more Steam, I better start, you know, checking out some of the games that are like highly recommended in this, in, you know, the genres I'm interested in. Esoteric Ebb is one that I've been meaning to check out for a long time, and I'm now so glad that I have. It is definitely going to be in the GOTY discussion for me because it is a game that released this year.
Nice.
It is, in the broadest of senses, it is about waking up just before an election and having to decide what you believe in. But also there are evil demons and shit. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of trickier than I thought it would be when I started this sentence.
And that's different from our current reality. How?
Well, that's actually, if you heard it that way, that actually might have communicated what I was trying to say, because playing through a game that is, frankly, doing commentary on things that many of us need to be interacting with commentary on right now, I'm finding the game somewhat soothing. Like, every time a character grouses about, like, oh, that overpowered politician made a shit choice for his constituents, I'm just like, preach, girl. Like, because I'm not really getting that kind of material from mainstream media right now. It's all just bread and circuses type shit.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years removed since Metaphor ReFantasio, so.
Ah, right. And so it is. It's like the first game I've played since then that had anything to really say politically, but instead it has a ton to say politically. So for me, I mean, right now, recency bias and the fact that I think about 45 minutes left of gameplay in it, and so I'm like right at like climaxing with it. It's like, yeah. Well, so the thing is, there's like, and I really don't want to say too much, but you have like 5 days of in-game time before the election happens, and I'm at the point where I think I'm going to learn what the election results are, so we'll see. But like, I'm really feeling very, very enthusiastic about the title right now. So let's see, another one that came out just this past week, and so I checked it out on PC also. This was Densha Attack. This is available on other platforms as well. I know a lot of folks are checking it out on Switch too. I'm having a real blast with this one. It is kind of almost like a what if Bit Trip Runner plus Devil May Cry and Tony Hawk. But like, that's a great combination for me personally.
Yeah.
It also has like a very keyed in, like very locked in aesthetic. It all just comes together really well. It's another one of those games where like, This Densha Attack so far for me is the tier of game where like, if this isn't a game of the year for me at the end of the year, then this must have turned out to be a phenomenal freaking year for games. I played a fair bit of Star Fox on Switch too. It is a real blast. I'm having a really good time with it. However, I am having to play it somewhat sparingly, or sporadically, I should say. Simply because I've played this game so much. It's like every time I play, I'm getting a golden star. I know all of these tracks so well. I've played them probably hundreds of times in some cases, simply because of how my good buddy Jason and I used to play Star Fox on N64. And since this is literally the same game, but prettier, Unfortunately, while it is a very replayable game, it's a very replayable game that I've already replayed a lot. Let's see. I also played Rhythm Heaven Groove on Switch too. That one just came out ish. It's really fun. I mean, it's more Rhythm Heaven. You probably at this point know if that's good or not for you. But if you like these games, the sort of almost Wario Land games in terms of like complexity, except they go on and have like length and even challenge in terms of like keeping up the rhythm while the game is trying to make the rhythm harder, you know, you're probably going to have a good time. I sure as hell am, but I like that gameplay a lot. And then two that I grabbed off of the Steam sale that I might not have checked out otherwise, unlike those other two I mentioned. This first one was called Deck of Haunts. It was put onto my radar by some thread on Reset Era, where they were talking about sort of like, hey, what are some games on the Steam sale that you think people should be paying attention to, but typically aren't? And so this Deck of Haunts game came up, and what it is almost like the Tecmo Deception games, which I've talked about here on the show loving, you know, where you have to sort of design a labyrinth for human explorers to come into, but you're the demon, so you're trying to construct a labyrinth that will kill the humans. Deck of Haunts does that approach, but it has like a deck buildy kind of aspect to it as you're building out your mansion and your rooms. And then you're playing, you know, your various ability effects on the rooms as the various humans are going through them in the hopes of killing them before they escape. It is a really good time for me. It's, you know, vibes, aesthetic, etc. The type of gameplay that I've enjoyed since like the PS1 era. I'm actually really happy to see it. I had noted in our console classics episode, wishlist episode, I had noted Kagero/Tecmo Deception as one of the games I wanted to have a comeback for. So having a similar type of gameplay, at least adjacent to it, actually does scratch an itch for me. Then I picked up one. It was called Vagras, the Riven Realms. This is another CRPG. I tend to think of them as narrative RPGs. Where everything is determined, you know, by like die rolls and the dialogue choices that you make. There's not like a real in-depth combat or anything. It's all just your choices, and your choices are going to super fucking matter. I very much enjoy these types of games. This Esoteric Ebb, Disco Elysium. This one is more of taking like a city builder approach though. So you're like making choices for like your caravan of people, and then presuming you know, continue playing and get far enough for, you know, your little city or kingdom or what have you. I haven't gotten far enough yet. I'm still, every time I play it, I end up dying in the early stages because it is very hard, this particular one. It has difficulty settings, but I'm not frustrated yet, so I'm not going to touch that yet. If I get frustrated, though, because I'm enjoying the game's approach enough, I probably would try some of the difficulty toggles. But we'll see if we get there. Now we get to a little bit of a more interesting one. I have three kind of more meta / IRL gaming experiences that I want to discuss. The first one is that I had a great Jackbox session. I had a great, great Jackbox session with friends. This was on PC. I want to thank Slaggy for making it happen. I used to have a group of IRLs that we regularly played Jackbox all together with, and I kind of, because of a specific IRL sociodynamic thing that occurred, have just been struggling to make games continue to happen, and Slaggy stepped up and made it happen, so I'm super appreciative. Thank you, Slaggy.
Thank you.
And then, but the cool thing is we had a real blast playing Jackbox. We played for, you know, 2.5 hours or so. We did, you know, TKO. We did some of the newer games using the Jackbox Chooser, which is such a great tool.
Very much.
We were able to stream it super easily via Discord. If any of our listeners are listening and you've gotten this deep in the show, we probably like you enough that we'd be down to play a Jackbox game with you sometime. Let us know. I had a blast.
I did too.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, my husband and I, Sulker, we ended up even ordering t-shirts. Well, mine is a t-shirt and his is like a sweatshirt of some of the TKO designs we made at this one. So that's kind of the sign of a good Jackbox night for me. Right. What did you want to say?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to echo. It was so lovely having a night of debauchery with some dear friends. It also made me think that, like, there's got to be some people out there, presumably, who play Jackbox and they're super normal, but, like, that's not us. Like, we say and write and draw the grossest shit.
Well, my thing is, I think it's funnest when it's not offensive, but it is bizarre. And, like, you know, because this group of IRLs we've known for so long, we do all know where the boundaries are. So no one's going to be offensive, but we are all going to say out of control stuff.
Absolutely.
And it really, I mean, like you say, I wouldn't want to play any other way. But this way is freaking cool as heck. It was just really, especially since I had been having a really rough couple of weeks. And frankly, it's been a rough year. The last calendar, I'm like, this year? Then I was like, wait, no, actually more like the last 12 months. It's just, it's been tough. So
last 6 years.
Right. So this was a little bit of a panacea for me. And so I really appreciated it. And then likewise, another panacea for the soul. I actually had an IRL hangout with you, Slaggy, and some of our other besties, including my former roommate. Basically was like an old get together on the classic SS buoy. While I was there in my hometown where we all met up, I went to a new retro game store that's there. It was really cool to see. It's my understanding that these kinds of shops are really starting to become more commonplace, which I think is super rad. I haven't seen any pop up yet in my current locality. I was pleased to see that they were priced a little below eBay prices for stuff, to the degree that I actually looked for a couple of games and that if they had had, I think I would have picked up. They had had an NES cart that I actually didn't know existed, or not, I wouldn't say I didn't know existed, but that I wouldn't have expected to see at that price. So I was actually like really overall, I said NES, but it was an SNES. But still, all the same, I was overall really pleased with it, really hype, and had a really good time.
I almost picked up a Uniracers SNES cart, except I don't have an SNES, but like kind of feeling like I might check and see next time I'm in the area if it's there. And yeah, it was a delight to see Space Pirate Ben, who was back on our BioShock Infinite episode back in 2013.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Let's see. And then while we were hanging out, we also went to round one. I had a really good time, but unfortunately, it was a warm day. And this particular round one is not the best ventilated. So it did end up being a little bit of a challenge with how warm it got. I did multiple rounds of Taiko no Tetsujin, and it was great to play, you know, a new-ish Taiko game. But man, after six songs, I was hot and sweaty. Like, you had to cut basically because you got so overheated.
I did, yeah. It was a bummer because I also played Taiko, which was great, as you said. But I did not get to really play any of the new poppin' music that was
there. Yeah. They had the new poppin' machine, and I played a couple songs on it. Like, initially, I played it on some like two button easy mode accidentally, but once I figured out how to work the UI, I got it on a correct difficulty and had a blast. It was really cool. I overall had a really good time. Ultimately went to some UFO catchers after you left and won us like three little plushies, because I like to win one for me, one for my husband, and one for my mother-in-law. And so I was able to do that, and so I still left happy. Overall, just had a really good, really lovely time between the local game shop and then the round one, which are basically right next to each other.
Yes.
Just really vibes, and hopefully something that we can do again at some point. Did Absolutely. You have anything else to say about the round one game shop, Jackbox, any of it?
No, I think you covered it, but, you know, nothing beats a round one holiday.
All right. Then that brings us at long last to our exit lewd. I hope you enjoyed the stay. Take it away.
All right. It was good to have you with us, even if just for the day. I miss the Samstown era very much. kind of was downhill from there. But anyway, we had posted very, very many of the social links questions over the course of Summer Game Fest. And so I will just cut right to it. We had a response from New over on Blue Sky and sharing about the Mixed Summer Game Showcase, saying, I watched Mixed Summer Game Showcase and it had a lot of games that caught my interest. Some I've only learned about from the showcase are Exarch and Husk Protocol. Then there are some other games that I've seen from other places before, like Lucid, Shade Protocol, and 13Z, the Zodiac Trial. Like, the fact that none of those games came up on ours just tells you how many games there were.
Yeah, really. The fact that you can have three different voices watch these showcases and all come away with such different focuses should really tell you just how much was on display.
Yeah, so thank you, New, for sharing your thoughts. We always appreciate any feedback. So we love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. You can find us on the social medias, including Blue Sky. Our handle is GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
And Mastodon at GameBuoy at MSTDN Games.
At GameBuoy at MSTDN.games.
And that's basically it, because social media is a hellscape at this point.
Right.
Even Blue Sky has its issues. That's why we don't even say we effing love it, because we love the people there. And we love you. But remember, you can also email us at gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G. But if you use an actual dot, we have that email address too.
Yeah, but I always forget to check it. So honestly, if you could just use D-O-T-O-R-G, that'd be great. Thanks. Love it.
Better.
Although I do think I set up a forwarding or something, but anyway. Our home base is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already knew that. But if there's somewhere else we should be, then please let us know. Because the podcast landscaping, that sounds like a cross-genre game. The podcasting landscape has sure changed, along with the political landscapes. Anyways, let us know if there's somewhere we should be that we aren't. And you should be at our friends at Buoy.
If you're friends with Buoy, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Buoy, then you're down with me.
As ever and always, I'd like to point you in the direction of Orange Lounge Radio 2DX, where every geek has a voice. Our friends and inspirations, please join us in looking forward to the new OLR 2DX Odyssey. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my words, they're the audience-supported site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the darn time, and we strongly encourage you to check them out, as well as support them if you like what they do. We'd also point you in the direction of Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed and released several games themselves. Please check them out.
Shout out to Doma Sky Tamers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's out now. I'd also like to recommend Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast where Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swinging 60s through the rockin' 90s to Spectacular Ultimate and beyond. And last but only least in terms of length, we have Neo Geo Go, where Aaron and Andre take on the Neo Geo library chronologically and quickly. It's pretty much the opposite of what we're doing today, but, you know, we all have our strengths. Slaggy, who would you recommend?
Go check out the Bobby Blackwolf Show, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. And of course, Bobby Blackwolf is one of the co-founders of the Voice of Geeks Network, which we are proud to be a member of, and we hope we don't embarrass them too much. I'd like to shout out to the Nintendo Pal Block podcast, a dive into the week that was in the world of Nintendo. I'd like to shout out to a friend of the show's blog that is Super Philip Central, which is a long-running video game blog that is your source for video games with a heroic touch. I'd like to shout out to Standard Issue Computing over on Blue Sky and a blog for retro and modern computer games, hardware, software, and history. Sasha's RetroBytes on Blue Sky for bytes of vintage gaming, including magazine scans and photographs. Defunct Games, your daily source for modern video game reviews, exciting trivia competitions, and old-school magazine analysis. And Thomas Game Docs over on YouTube, where each video covers a different aspect of video game history, such as game development and sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises, such as The Legend of Zelda. Speaking of which, our wonderful theme music was done by the late great Zelda Reorchestrated, which was the project that reorchestrated beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They feel like the legend continues in the form of ZREO Second Quest, so go check them out today and show your support at ZREOSQ.com. And last but not least, shout out to my hot robot boyfriend, Craig, our robotic recording engineer, without whom GameBooey would not be possible in the modern era. So definitely check out Craig if you have disco recording needs.
Did you say disco recording needs?
Someone left the cake out in the rain.
You know, I was all teed up to make a Dazzler from the X-Men joke, and then you made a different joke.
The MacArthur Park joke.
Yeah, I know. I was gooped.
Hey, I'm never using that recipe again. Oh, no.
The coming days, we're going to be grilling up some summer fun with a look at our favorite sunshine seasonal games. Plus, there's still that little Mother's Day something floating around out there. Uh-oh. And school will be coming back in session. And more. We've got quite a bit planned out for you as we continue the year. Please stay tuned for that. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And because the secret of success is realizing that the less time you spend always striving for more
opens the door to how to live.
You get much more the more you give.
And the more you give, the more you'll be a suspect.
Maybe I should be?
Now recording.
Hi, Daddy.
Okay.
Daddy Craig and I need a moment alone.